Let's go ahead and get started, folks. Welcome to the, a cold November 12, 2013, Finance, Government Services and Operations Committee meeting. Committee members, our agenda is 10 items tonight, unlike the 23 we had last month. Let me start with the consent agenda. On the consent agenda tonight, I'm proposing item number one, contract award, operation of the youth shelter for action. I'm pulling item number two, contract award, public safety technology systems, off of the consent agenda. Remaining on the consent agenda would be item number three, contract award, 911 telephony system for action, and item number four, award authority increase consulting services from Kimley Horn and Associates, Inc. for transportation capital project management services for action. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Chairman York, seconded by Supervisor Williams. Discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion passes 4-0-1 with Supervisor Letourneau absent. He's running a little bit late. He works in D.C. and he's caught in traffic. I think the snowstorm got him. So, is he here?
Finally showed up.
It's a blizzard.
Yeah,
oh,
he showed up.
Okay. At this point, there was a tragedy that occurred in Arlington in the last 24 hours. I'm going to turn it over to Chairman York for just one moment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Unfortunately, last night, the director of TPB, the Transportation Planning Department, was killed last night. And our hearts go out to Ron Kirby's family. Ron was a good man, did some excellent work for the entire region with respect to his knowledge and his dedication to solving transportation problems. And hopefully this will be solved very quickly. It was a we still don't know yet exactly what happened. It has been labeled a homicide at this point, but we do not still have the full details, and hope that if it was, that it gets solved very quickly. But again, our hearts go out to his widow and children in this incident. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman York. Our hearts and sympathies obviously go out to the family. It's a terrible tragedy, and many on this committee knew the gentleman. All right, with that, let's move on to item number two. Item number two is the Public Safety Technology Systems Award. This is an award for a CAD system. If I can have staff come forward. Mr. Mays here. You may want to come forward too, since we've had this discussion. As we look at the item, looks like there were six proposals received. There was a pretty wide discrepancy in the evaluations, both from a technical and a price perspective to the county. There was a short list of two of those six that the PRAG kind of shortlisted two. The recommendation is to award to the higher priced of those two, who is also the highest priced of all six proposals received. And today we did receive a letter from the other second bidder that remained in contention to the end, basically questioning some of the PRAG's determinations. And it was based on basically our packet and the reasons for selecting the apparent successful offer that's in the item. And I want to give staff an opportunity to comment on that. That's why I pulled that off of consent.
Chairman Bono, I will comment on the process. There were four shortlisted firms that were instead of two. They went through demonstrations, thorough demonstrations. They went through reference checks and site visits. We had several members of staff sitting on the proposal analysis group, as well as a consultant that helped lead the process. I would choose not to get into the specifics of the evaluations at this time, since their negotiations of a contract are still to be done. This item is just asking for the ability to negotiate with Motorola. So if anyone else on the staff would like to add to that, I can only speak to the process. It's a typical process that we follow on any of our competitive negotiation solicitations, just a little more high profile with the the item that we were soliciting.
Yes, it's a significant dollar value here.
Yes,
and
sir.
The difference between the apparent successful offer and the firm we received the letter from today was about $1.5 million.
Yes, sir. And we strive to not put anything negative about firms in our items. We try and stress the positive as the reasons we are selecting or recommending the firm that we're recommending. It is a competitive negotiation, which means we're not looking at just the lowest cost. We're looking at the lowest or the best proposal to meet our needs. The group felt that the firm we're recommending offered that to us. Under the Code of Virginia, cost is not the only consideration. It's just one of the factors that we consider.
Did your evaluation criteria clearly spell out that it was a best value evaluation?
Yes, sir.
And not low price technically
it clearly
acceptable.
It clearly shows the criteria that we're evaluating on and the weights associated with those criteria.
Okay, I'm going to open it up to the committee, and then I've got a motion I'd like to make. Chairman York.
Thank you. And I appreciate, Mr. Chairman, you pulling this off in light of what we have received. Donnie, when we look at proposals to us, we're not just looking at the bottom line, but I would assume we're looking at past history as much as we can in terms of performance and what is anticipated and going forward to ensure that the bidder can deliver the product that they say they can deliver, as well as to be able to maintain it in the future where that particular maintenance would apply. In that, we do know of certain instances, not necessarily with our county, but what I know of around the jurisdictions where low bidders have been picked only to come back to where the eventual cost of the item happened to be more than the original cost. So I know it's a very fluctuating issue here in examining this. Are you telling this committee that this is definitely the best proposal for us to choose and what you had all received?
I am telling you that based on the evaluation of the people in the know, the end users, the consultants with the experience that assisted with this, it is their recommendation that this is the best proposal for the system that we're buying.
And when does the board need to take action on this by?
I believe the December board meeting is when the action needs to be taken. I believe there's a possibility, Mr. Hemstreet may want to add to that, but I believe there may be an issue.
Mr. Chairman, I believe what Mr. Legge is referring to is there is a, separate from the procurement, there is a federal grant that allows for CAD to CAD to be implemented that is paid for by the federal grant. That grant lapses in 2014. So if we miss the window, we would just lose the grant. The value of that grant's about $300,000.
So in order to take advantage of the grant, we need to take action in the December meeting.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Familiar with some disputes in my day job, and I guess one of the questions I had was, what were the evaluation criteria? The requirement's not in our item, so I didn't know if the evaluation criteria were they published in the requirement.
Yes, sir.
Okay. What is the disputes process for other bidders that didn't feel as though they were evaluated properly?
Since the dispute would be coming from an offeror who competed on the solicitation, we would take that into consideration. And really, the dispute cannot happen until an award has been made. We will be glad, once we've made a recommendation, to let him look at the file, okay, or let that firm look at the file. But an actual appeal protest cannot be made until a formal award has been made by the board.
Okay, I know in the federal,
and then,
go ahead, sir.
And then from that point, we have I believe it's a 10-day time frame to respond to that. If they do not like the answer that they're given, they have an appeal process up to the county administrator.
Because the federal acquisition regulations have a dispute process, I think typically it's 10 days, they file a dispute after award.
Right.
There's also a standing requirement, which it looks in this case as though Intergraph would be entitled to is the second place evaluate. So all those processes, I assume, are similar in terms of them having the ability to kind of go through the process and dispute the award.
They can protest an award once it's made. They have 10 days to file that protest. But until the award's made, they really have nothing to protest at this time.
Is there a debriefing requirement?
There's no requirement. We give debriefings all the time to our unsuccessful firms.
Okay. But that hasn't taken place yet because no formal award is taking place.
Yes.
Thank you.
Supervisor Luterno.
So I think the board is in a little bit of a difficult position because we're being asked to grant authorization to move forward with one particular firm that happens to be the high bidder here. But if anybody were to ask us why that firm versus the other firm, we can't tell. We don't know the answer to that question, and you're not telling us tonight. And I understand why you're not telling us tonight. I don't dispute the logic behind not engaging in that in this particular setting. But I think, at least for my part, before the board takes formal action in December, I'm going to need more. I'm going to need to understand what the staff recommendation is and why the staff recommendation is what it is. That can be certainly conducted, you know, individually or in a different setting. I will vote tonight to move this item forward to December so that we can stay on track with it. But I think it is important for the board, it's particularly in an instance where we're going to be potentially awarding a contract to a higher bidder, to be able to justify publicly why we're doing that.
I totally agree with you, and if you would like to have individual meeting with the staff to go over our reasoning, that would be certainly something we could arrange.
Yes, thank you.
Supervisor Reed.
Thank you. Yeah, I would agree with Supervisor Luterno. I don't mind bringing it to the next board meeting, but I am concerned about the increase in the cost. And the other two bidders were substantially lower, but it was an issue of expertise.
It was expertise, the various issues within their systems that they're proposing, experience, you know, found through the reference checks and site. Well, two of them didn't even make the site visits, but yeah, the type of system they're proposing, their experience with those systems, so they were scored lower. Yes.
You know who the town police departments use and how this would interface with those?
No, sir, I do not have that information.
Ms. Wickens.
Do they interface?
The town of Leesburg uses New World Systems.
How's it working?
Excuse me?
You were the town. How does it work?
I haven't heard from them recently, so I can't answer that question.
So that's a big police department. Will the Motorola system or the Intergraph system interface with this New World system? Because don't they have to have compatibility?
This time in the national unit. I'm Mick Lemish. I'm the public safety
division. Can you move the microphone closer, please?
I'm Mick Lemish. I'm the public safety division manager in DIT. At this time within the national capital region, there is not a CAD-to-CAD cooperative agreement with police departments. So they don't necessarily, CAD systems on the police side, on the law side, don't necessarily interoperate. We do more sharing with those folks through our 911 system and telephone calls for service.
That's interesting. I'll go back to my file. When I was on the town council, I was pretty sure that the town approved a system, town of Leesburg approved the system, primarily to be compatible with the sheriff's. And this was a different system, not a dispatch system. So, you know, looking at the fact that we have even a lower bidder here, I'm just, you know, wondering why we're going with this high bid. Thanks.
Supervisor Delgadio.
Well, yeah, I'm going to need, like Supervisor Luterno and Supervisor Reed, I'm going to need to know your measurement criteria for why we're picking the high bid versus the low bid. In other words, I can understand you're being asked to do the best thing for the county, and you're making a judgment, and we're agreeing with your judgment most of the time. But when there's such a disparity between the two low bidders, we could knock them out because they don't know what we need, or they're not going to be able to figure it out, and they're too far back on the grading system. You know, I could figure that out. You have the extremes. You have the people who don't know what they're doing. God bless them for trying. God bless them for coming in and trying to make the bid. And sometimes there's 100 bids, and you got to weed out 99 of them. So thanks for doing that, but we need to know what the criteria is, so that we're agreeing with you on the public record and we're not being given, you know, short shrift to the guy who's just a $1 million back. Because that million, a million here and a million there, you know, it could be, get up a lot of money. So thank you for the work you're doing, and I have faith in you.
Sure. We'll be happy to set those meetings up with you.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to move that the Finance, Government Services, and Operations Committee move this forward to the full Board of Supervisors at our 4 December meeting with no recommendation.
Second.
Seconded by Chairman York. The CIP, if I remember correctly, has $12 million in it for this project, correct?
That's correct.
So both of the top two ranked bids are over our budget.
They're not, actually. They include 5 years of maintenance. It's just the award authority. So they come in below the $12
million. The capital portion.
That's correct.
Okay, gotcha. In the packet, you do give us reasons why you feel this solution is the superior solution, at least at a high level. And in the letter we got today, the other bidder takes each one of those points and addresses their view of each one of those points. The first one, for example, is most current technology, specifically MS SQL and .NET Framework. Then you give a whole bunch of other ones. They're kind of doing a point counterpoint. I don't really want to get into that, and I don't want to get into that in the board meeting, but it would be good for $1.5 million when you come to the full board to try to quantify what we're getting for that $1.5 million. What are we getting above and beyond the other bidder's proposal for that $1.5 million, and why you feel that $1.5 million is justified for that capability? Okay, I think that's what we need to hear. And I think that would make it a lot easier. I will take you up on a personal briefing on this prior to the next, the 4 December board meeting. Thank you. Other discussion?
Just
Chairman York?
All you need is a phone call, Donna.
Okay. No other discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, folks. Okay, we're going to move on to what's probably going to be a very quick item. Item number 5, FY 2014 CIP Amendment, Tall Cedars Parkway, from Riding Center Drive to Pine Brook Road for action. This is in the Dulles District, so Supervisor Letourneau, I'm going to turn this over to you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. The intent with this item is to be able to complete and open a four-lane Tall Cedars Parkway, which initially was known as the Southern Collector Road of Route 50. The county has a project underway deep into the design stage, hopefully heading out to bid shortly, that will build Tall Cedars between Gum Spring Road and Pine Brook Road. The other half of that from Pine Brook Road, which intersects with 50 to Riding Center Drive, is currently being constructed in a two-lane stretch by the Avonlea residential, well, series of Avonlea residential applications and development. Unfortunately, the remaining two lanes, and I should add that the county project is for four lanes, is held up in a proffer which has not been triggered by Avonlea Commercial. So you all might remember that we had a land use application in front of us a few months ago, in which we approved a rezoning for another section of Avonlea Residential. The board was able to obtain $800,000 and the road money up front for that, which will replenish the source of funds that we're going to tap into tonight. What my sort of plan here is to try to actually combine the existing project, which is constructing the four-lane stretch from Gum Spring to Pine Brook, with the additional two lanes that we need from Pine Brook to Riding Center Drive. And that will enable us to actually open up a nice four-lane stretch of road at the same time, so that we don't end up in a situation like we have with Loudoun County Parkway, where we have a four-lane stretch that goes down to a two-lane stretch and then goes back up to a four-lane stretch. We do have the proffer funds from existing applications that came in over the summer to be able to do that. And so what we're asking for tonight is to add this to the CIP for about $2.5 million to make that adjustment and be able to go out to bid all at once with this project. So I will go ahead and entertain a motion. Yes. I move the Finance, Government Services, and Operations Committee recommend that the Board of Supervisors approve budget adjustment number 970043 to amend the adopted FY 2013 to FY 2018 capital improvement program by appropriating $2,502,188.35 in cash proffers in the Public Facilities Fund in FY 2014 and transfer it to the Capital Fund to construct a half section of Tall Cedars Parkway from Riding Center Drive to Pine Brook Road.
Motion was seconded by Chairman York. Opening?
No opening other than to say that I'm sure that last 35 cents will be what brings it home for us. Right.
Other discussion? All right. Closing?
I think we covered it.
All right. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion to carry unanimously. Thank you. At this point, we're going to move on to item number 6, landfill fee waiver grant applications received for the FY 15 to FY 16 biennium. Mr. Mays, Mr. Pizzullo, Ms. Back. Is there anything you'd like to bring to our attention in the packet?
Before you, Chairman Buono, is the applications for the landfill fee waiver. We have 39 applicants that have applied, and they are currently the recipients, and they're the government entities. At this time, we just want to request that 2015 applications be considered for your to be included in FY 2015 budget, to be included for the 2015 budget deliberations.
Okay, and there were no new applications this time. They were all former beneficiaries of the fee waiver?
Actually, we have one new applicant. Actually, last year there's one group that missed a deadline, and so they reapplied this year, and we had one applicant.
And who was that new applicant?
Because that,
that wasn't clear in our packet, so I couldn't tell if we had any.
Yes, that's the Middleburg Agricultural Center, Virginia Tech University.
Looking for that in the packet.
That's under the other government entities.
Other government. Okay.
BPI.
There it is. Okay. And it, oh, that's a very small amount. It's 400 some dollars. Okay. Ms. York.
Nan, I'm just curious in looking at under nonprofit organizations, third one down, Friends of Homeless Animals for 1.6. Oh, I'm sorry, 1600. Last night I read this. I can't use an iPad anymore. It kills my eyes. I was reading it as $1.6 million. I was like, what the heck are they doing for all of that? Mr. Chairman, I'm going to go ahead and move that the Finance, Government Services, and Operations Committee recommend to the Board of Supervisors approve the recommended fiscal year 2015-2016 land fill fee waiver as outlined in attachment one. Further move that the Finance, Government Services, and Operations Committee recommend that the Board of Supervisors direct staff to include these waivers in a fiscal year 2015 proposed fiscal plan to be considered by the Board of Supervisors during the fiscal 2015 budget deliberation.
I'll second that motion. Opening? Okay. I will point out one thing, because in future years you're going to probably have to asterisk this. But you're recommending we reduce VDOT significantly to more accurately reflect their actual usage of the landfill versus this high number they had, correct?
That's correct.
And they went from about over a million in waivers to more around 390,000 in waivers. So it looks like we have a large decrease, but the factor is we're just adjusting VDOT is all we're doing, and we're going to want to reflect that in future years so people understand why we had this big drop this time. Mr. Mays?
Years and years ago, VDOT did use the landfill much more than they do now. It was board policy, I guess, 7 or 8 years ago at least, that the board did not want the landfill capacity taken up by VDOT. And at that point, they lowered VDOT's allotment to basically the current levels. And, of course, they adhere to that current level. So this just maintains them at basically the level they've been bringing us. My guess is if we set $1 million, they'd probably bring you $1 million worth of trash eating up additional landfill space.
Right.
But this is just a continuation of previous year board policy.
And once they hit the approved board value, then they're charged, essentially, correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. Other discussion? Closing? Supervisor Turner.
Yeah, I was going to ask the same question, but Vida, just to be clear, did they request $996,000 last year, and we gave them $346,000?
That's correct.
Okay, so they're requesting the same thing this year, and we're giving them roughly the same thing, $345,900. There was one other organization that had a fairly significant discrepancy, Loudoun Cares. We gave them $620,000. They're requesting $10,500, but I see that your recommendation is at the higher level. Do you have an explanation as to why that's jumped up so dramatically?
I believe that in FY 14 or 13, I believe they are in the midst of building. They have a construction going on. And so when I had a discussion with them, they said the FY 15, they would need fee waiver to dump their construction and so forth. And so in FY 16, they're the amount would decrease, going back to normal.
They were building out their building that they have here in downtown Leesburg,
yeah,
during that time
and
frame.
It has been delayed. That's why they need
right.
additional for FY 15.
Okay. That makes sense. Thank you.
Closing. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried unanimously. Thank you. At this point, we're going to move on to item number 7, resources for managing local fixed route transit services. This is an action item as well.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. As you're aware, October 1st, the county took responsibility for the fixed route transit system that is currently operated by Virginia Regional Transit. Along with managing this service comes a tremendous amount of responsibility to plan for the system, to respond to customer inquiries, to administer the contract for the third party, to prepare the budgets, monitor the budgets, and also to apply for and manage the grant funding. The transit system within the county has not seen an increase in additional staffing since 2002, regardless of the fact that the system demands have significantly increased annually since that time. With the assumption of responsibility for the fixed route system, the staff is recommending that a position that is currently funded as the Tyson's Express Manager, which that position grant funding will expire in the spring or throughout the winter during the period of time when revenue service for phase one of the Silver Line opens, we're recommending to you that you consider transitioning this position from a grant funded position to a full-time position to serve as an operations manager to oversee and manage the fixed route system. We are recommending that the position be partially funded for the balance of this fiscal year to the tune of $37,356 from local gas tax allocations, and then following that it be rolled into an FTE within the regular operating budget. We have the operations chief here and other staff that can answer any questions.
Let me ask a couple questions. The Tyson's Express was funded by the Metro Project, correct?
That's correct.
And is that funded through phase one or phase two?
Phase one.
Though it's not, Metro's not to Loudoun, it's only to Wheelie, the Tyson's Express goes away.
That's correct.
And so you're looking to convert that position that was paid for by the project because we were designated an urban area for most of the county and we now had lost our federal funding and have to take over the local transit service. Is that the rationale here?
That's correct, and we have no staff to oversee that at this time.
Okay, now in our packet it says also it is projected that at the time the express route will be modified, included in the county's commuter bus service. So are we saying we're going to now offer the Tyson's Express?
I'll allow Nancy to respond to that, but yeah.
So, yes, Mr. Chairman. As we talked about at the Transportation Summit, we're going to take a piece of that Tyson's Express and modify it to become rail connection to Spring Hill take up the reverse commute and also just do the most highly populated areas employee-wise of Tysons.
And would the plan be for it to go away when Phase 2 opens?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because I don't think we should be providing express service all to Tysons once Metro's in place. Okay.
Exactly.
Let me open it up to committee. Supervisor Letourneau?
Thanks. Yeah, I had some questions here. So as it stands right now, we've already lost that VRT funding. And we currently have a Tysons manager. Who's managing the system as we speak today?
Managing the Tysons Express, yes.
Who's managing the rest of the local system?
I am, and Scott Gross.
Okay.
As well as staff at VRT.
We have an emergency services contract with VRT, which is effectively operating right now as sort of the fill-in-the-gap time period.
That's correct.
What happens, I mean, as I recall, we are, you know, I'm eager for this, Nancy. We are going to be getting some sort of plan or discussion or proposal about local transit service. In fact, I think there may have been a discussion at the Transportation Land Use Committee, which I'm not on. How does that impact staffing? Because obviously, if we are undertaking an expansion of local transit service, we will need to add staff, I would presume, to manage that, right? So where is that in process right now?
That report's going to be presented. The final draft report is going to be presented at the Transportation Land Use Committee this Friday. But conceptually, it sort of recommends oversight such as the commuter bus, still contracted, but somebody in the county to plan, do the grants administration, and oversee the system.
Does it also recommend details in terms of what the service would look like and how rapidly it would be expanded?
Yes.
Okay. Is that going to go to the board following TLUC?
Yes.
At the December meeting?
Hopefully.
Okay. Okay. So that naturally kind of my progression there was to figure out why we needed to do this now as opposed to waiting until the budget, because the Tysons manager position will expires in March. I mean, it's not typical for us to necessarily be adding an FTE mid-cycle like this.
To get to your question, Mr. Letourneau, there is a bit of a strategy here that might not come across very clearly in the item, and that is to take advantage of the circumstances we're in. With the grant funding expiring, that'll come up very shortly, hopefully, on the horizon with Phase 1 opening. So having somebody that has that expertise, background, and can help us in this other area that we're moving into, subject to your approval and acceptance of the route modifications and the findings of the study, and that should come to you, as Nancy said, Friday to TLUC, but then depending on how that goes, December 4th business meeting. This is probably a good idea to be able to draw from that resource instead of saying, you know what, Phase 1 opens up, that's the end of that. Now let's wait around and see what it is that we're really going to need for all of this local fixed route. We have some expertise now that's been developed. We'd like to take advantage of that and roll forward with it. You can see the fiscal impact is not that great, and I think it probably could help them get a lot of stuff
done. You may not be able to answer this, but would you anticipate requesting additional positions specifically for local transit in the upcoming budget year during that process?
This particular one would come forward in 2015.
But is one person going to be enough to manage what we are potentially planning on doing is really what I'm asking.
For 15?
For 15, yes. Beyond that, probably not. Okay.
Chairman York?
I think that question's hard to really answer until the board decides what it's going to do. And all impacts of staffing is based on what we do kind of going forward. Nancy, in your estimation, what point, not us as a board, but corporately, does the Board of Supervisors have to make a decision with all things transit as it will relate to rail when rail service comes online in 18 or 19?
We are scheduled for a full-blown TDP, Transit Development Plan, that will be hopefully funded by the state to occur in 16.
Okay.
So I think that is the year that a lot of decisions will be made.
That it will start? That the plan will start in 16?
No, that's the year it will be crafted.
That's what I meant, that you're basically starting the drafting of the plan in 16. How long roughly will it take?
The first TDP we did, and that piggybacked right on the CTP update that had transit in it, took about 6 months. This one will be a little bit more complex because it'll have a lot of public outreach that was done in the CTP update, so we didn't duplicate that. I would think it's probably a nine-month project.
Okay. And Charles, just to make sure I understood what I think you were trying to say, and it's already bedtime for me, and I've still got meetings tonight to go to. Are you just simply saying we're trying to take advantage that we got this individual already working for us, and instead of letting them go and coming back after the fiscal 15 budget to try to rehire this person, we're just keeping the continuity there? Thank you.
That's it. Supervisor Reed.
Thank you. So this new position is going to be handling just the VRT routes or also the long-haul bus service, the commuter bus service?
It will primarily be for the local fixed routes, and then would be also, because he already has experience with the Tysons Express, on the commuter bus side, there will be some overlap there.
Will they be able to, would that person be available as a resource to the town of Leesburg, because they're going to be taking over or at least the funding of those fixed routes? Or is he just going to be handling the county, basically?
He would be for the county at this time, yes.
Unless the board directed otherwise. If the board directed us to provide assistance to the town, we would follow through with that.
I would appreciate it if we could add that as a friendly amendment.
I think we ought to reach out to the town and understand how they're planning on handling it and what requirements they might have before we just throw that out.
Well, I mean,
I don't want to throw it out without understanding their approach
to it.
Limit
the amount of time, you know, like to 2 hours a month or something. I mean, but a lot of the fixed routes that we're thinking of keeping are within the town limits because you have a lot of transit-dependent people. So, you know, I'm just a little concerned, you know, that I've been concerned for a long time that the town suddenly stepped up to the plate to fund all of their routes and, you know, what kind of expertise do they have down there? So I guess I can just add a friendly amendment that we reach out to the town.
Well, there is no amendment on our motion on the table. I'll go ahead and put one on the table. I move that the Finance, Government, Service, and Operations Committee recommend that the Board of Supervisors approve adding 1.00 FTEs to the Department of Transportation Capital Infrastructure by converting the current temporary Tysons Express manager position into the permanent full-time operations position. I further move that the Finance, Government, Service, and Operations Committee recommend that the Board of Supervisors direct staff to prepare a budget adjustment appropriating $37,356 of local gasoline tax revenues to fund this position in FY 2014.
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Letourneau. I don't have an opening.
Well, can I add a friendly amendment to ask the town of Leesburg if they would need any assistance from this position? Is that, I don't know if that's worded properly, Mr. Bona, but
would a discussion with the town over how they're handling their routes be fruitful in this context?
May I speak to that?
Yes, Ms. Cornley.
There, after the Transportation Land Use Committee presentation this Friday, there will be a presentation, that same sort of presentation tailored for the town by the consultant on November 25th. So that will really be the first time that they have seen the full report.
Okay, so given that, it's premature at this point, and the amendment's really not needed at this point. I think we have to go ahead, get them that presentation, let them begin to determine what their needs are, and then maybe we can have that discussion down the road. Mr. York.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would agree with your assessment on that, but for Supervisor Reed's benefit, I would agree that the towns need to be involved as we go forward planning. I mean, it's only natural because the town citizens are Loudoun County citizens, and it's not going to make sense for us to have a Loudoun bus program and not service the town needs. So as we go forward in developing plans, the towns are very key to going forward and planning.
Yeah, before next meeting, Mr. Chairman, this will go to the December 4th meeting. I would like to get an idea of what the town would like to see, if there's any, if they need to tap into this position. Thank you.
I think when they receive the briefing is a good time to have a discussion with them. Okay. Mr. Delgadio.
Thanks. And I've been to the, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been to the transportation meetings, all of them, and the briefing, I think I remember Sterling had 16% involvement of some kind. What was that ratio, the highest ratio of the fixed route, or what route was it?
That was fixed route, yes.
So it was fixed route. So I see the value here. I noticed that, and I don't, I apologize if I don't know Leesburg's percentage. What was Leesburg's percentage? I mean, we had Ashburn in there. We had everybody in there. South Riding, everybody was in there.
Supervisor Delgadio, I don't okay. know that off the
well,
top of my head.
Obviously, I'm partial to the highest turnout in terms of the percentage that we are always measuring. There was a proposal, well, there is an implementation of a higher amount of money on the fair that was just implemented in the last week.
October 1st.
Mm-hmm. So we have now the first 30 days.
We do.
How's it going? Are they still at that high level? Are they getting buy-in?
There was some concern that there would be lost ridership from a higher fare, and that did not occur.
That's awesome. Okay, well, that's always good to hear, because that'll help us all here at this deliberation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion will carry unanimously. Thank you, folks. I'm going to move on to item A, qualifications for BOE appointments. And to the committee members, I do want to point out that what this item is just simply soliciting interested candidates by directing staff to publish the proposed notices in the newspaper, the website, somewhat similar to what we did with the Loudoun Water Board. Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I am not Mr. Roberts, but I'm here to fill in for him this evening.
Did you say Roberts? Not Mr. Roberts. Go ahead, Dave.
That's correct. He was down in Richmond at the SEC hearings on the toll road, carrying out the board's wishes. So,
we're aware of that. Thank you.
Wanted to come before you this evening, and as you said, Mr. Bona, that this item is very similar to the Loudoun Water item. What we would do, and just to point out, and as we laid out in the item, there are a few specific requirements for qualifications for the Board of Equalization members. So we would make sure through this process to advertise and to seek out those with those particular qualifications to make sure that we meet the state code guidelines in those areas. Other than that, it's pretty straightforward, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Right, and we have three members of the BOE whose terms are expiring at the end of the calendar year, correct?
That is correct,
so
yes.
We do. This is a time-sensitive item for us to get out there.
Yes, sir.
Right, and there's some very specific qualifications that these people have to meet, and then we also have some qualifications that the BOE as a whole and an aggregate has to meet, correct?
Yes, sir, and we would make sure to track those. So make sure they're residents, that a majority own land in the county. We would need at least two of the five members to be one of these criteria, which is real estate appraisers in commercial or multifamily.
Because we have a population greater than 100,000.
Correct, yes, sir.
The alternates, what do? They fill in when some of the primaries can't make a BOE hearing? What's exactly their role?
That's my understanding. We went through a time where there was the BOE had some difficulty meeting quorum, and so that's when the county requested that additional authority and got did so. My understanding at this point is we do not have any alternates that are sitting on the BOE, and I'm not sure that we've had the same attendance issues as of late. But we do maintain that authority, so the board could still nominate alternates, I believe, at this time.
Right, so that could create actually five positions for us, not three, correct, if we chose to I think there's two alternates?
That's correct, and that's my understanding. I would want to verify with Mr. Roberts that those vacancies would be able to be filled in the same manner, but my understanding is the board has that authority, so there could be up to five positions that are filled.
I suspect we'll get a lot of interest. Are BOE members paid?
They are paid. I believe it's $15 an hour of the time that they spend in hearings.
It's a lot more than the Board of Supervisors makes. So, I'm just going to move that the Finance Government Service Operations Committee recommend that the Board of Supervisors solicit interested candidates for appointment to the Board of Equalization by directing staff to publish the proposed notice in the newspaper and on the website and to distribute the notice to appropriate professional organizations. Seconded by Supervisor Williams. No opening on my part. Discussion? Supervisor Letourneau?
Been quite a ride on this particular item. I was actually going to bring up that issue of salary. What would be the process for change? We changed the salary of board members during the FY13 budget process, and that was at a time where we felt that the BOE was, quite frankly, kind of abusing their payment schedule. It's kind of unusual for a board-appointed body to be paid hourly. You know, the Planning Commission is paid via salary. What would be the process to convert this to a salary? I wouldn't say what the Planning Commission is actually paid, but would it require a change in the ordinance, or how does that work?
My recollection of those discussions in the budget for that year is that the board simply made that determination as part of the budget, and that became effective the next budget year.
Okay.
I don't believe there are any ordinances required, unless I'm mistaken, Mr. Hemstreet.
Mr. Chairman, would you like us to address that issue when it goes to the board and include a section on that process?
Yes, I think so.
I would. I think we should look at that being a salaried flat position rather than hourly position, so we don't incentivize additional meeting hours.
Right, and I think we should also look at what some of the comparable boards do. Loudoun Water is a great example.
Yeah, sure.
The Planning Commission is salaried. Right now, we know that this board is salaried. I think hourly gets into problems. So of course, there's also reimbursement for certain expenses, those types of things.
I just wanted to make one point that's not really related to this, but perhaps something to keep in mind, that this is a very specific function for this board. These are highly technical positions, and yet what the board is contemplating are direct appointments, which is a discussion when we have when we consider our course of action on another commission, we may want to keep in mind.
Other discussion? Okay, I will just point out again, time's a little bit of the essence here. We have some strict standards to meet. We asked for this authority from the General Assembly. They gave it to us. We're going to go out and change the ordinance. Well, we did change the ordinance. Now we're going to go solicit candidates. So we're invoking the authority the General Assembly gave us in their last session. So all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. This is a very agreeable group tonight, by the way. So, all right, let's move on to item number 9, Fire and Rescue Commission recommendations on supplemental FY 2014 financial support to volunteer fire and rescue companies for action. Oh, you want me to slow down? I've never had that request before.
I think that final item.
There's two. We have two items left that are probably the longest of our two items. Welcome, Chief Scroce. I understood you wanted 10 minutes to give us a little presentation. So if the committee will indulge us, Nick, go ahead.
Good.
Do we have it for display?
We will. We have the spreadsheet to show you, and we also have a slide presentation we'd like to
present. The spreadsheets are all in our packets.
Right. This one's dynamic, and it would be helpful to you to be able to see how it works.
Okay.
I'm going to be very brief and then turn it over to – I'm Nick Croce. I'm the chairman of the Fire and Rescue Commission. I'm here with President Richard Wolf from the Leesburg Fire Department, who chaired the algorithm subcommittee of our ad hoc president's group. And this is Brad Quinn, president of Purcellville Fire, and he chaired the ad hoc committee. We provided you a packet that shows all of the information relative to this this recommendation. There are three salient points that I want to point out to you in this presentation. One is that what the group was able to determine is that there is a funding gap. Second thing that they were able to determine is that the value of services that are provided by the volunteers, when looked at as how much it would cost for career staff to provide that, is in excess of $23 million. So it's a $23 million asset in staffing that's represented by the volunteer companies. And then finally, we developed an algorithm, and an algorithm that is based on metrics. It's reproducible. It can be audited. It's an algorithm that, if you look at the first two items that I mentioned, the first two of the points, there's unanimous support for that. The algorithm has support from 11 of the 16 companies. Three are opposed to it, and two abstain from it. The companies that are in favor of it are in favor of it because they feel that it is reproducible. It is based on metrics, and it gives us some basis for understanding how we're funded. The current system is not understandable. It's been around for a long time, and no one knows where it came from, but we know that it causes problems in the companies. You do, because you charged the Government Reform Commission to look at it. They came back and made a recommendation to you, but it didn't go through. We knew this, and we were holding back, waiting for the action of the Government Reform Commission. It's something that we waited, and then when it didn't, in June, I charged this committee to look at the allocation for fiscal 14. We released funding for the first quarter for fiscal 14. And then subsequent, because when the committee couldn't complete all its work, we released the second quarters of funding. The second half of funding for fiscal 14 has not yet been released. If this allocation formula is accepted, it would give us the opportunity to make adjustments in fiscal 14. I'm going to ask that President Quinn make a brief presentation about the algorithm and about the President's Committee so that you understand exactly where we're coming from. President Wolf can offer the spreadsheet to you, and then we'll answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Sorry, Chairman, had to step out for a minute, but we'll go into the presentation.
Very good. I appreciate that. Thank you, sir. Richard, just back up one slide, please, if you would. I am Brad Quinn. I'm the president of Company 2 and was, for my sins, assigned as chair of this particular group that the Fire Commission put together, a large committee of 17 companies, actually 16 active companies. And we met over the course of the summer while all were on vacation in July and August into September. So we were busy. If you look at the slide in front of you, this is essentially the statement of our concern. Go ahead, Richard, next one. Nick has also given you a sense of the three charges that our committee had to cope with, and that was, number one, to develop a process for redistributing the resources made available to us as companies. Number two, to develop a recommendation for, at the time, a $500,000 one-time allocation and a $226,000 escrow reserve, which is now gratefully put into the actual budget. And finally, to develop a description of the cost of running the volunteer system and the benefits that accrue to the Loudoun County taxpayer by virtue of that work. Richard. So we started out first with a clear, trying to establish the fact that we wanted to make it clear that there are tangible and intangible benefits associated with the volunteer system in this county. We all know that. We support a combined effort, volunteer and career. And there are many, many, many things that the volunteers contribute to that accrue benefits to the taxpayer, both financial and otherwise. And you can see here on this list that there are several unique characteristics of a volunteer system that we need to maintain and wish to maintain going forward. Many of these costs, many of these activities have costs associated with them that are very easy to quantify. Others of them are much less easy to quantify. Certainly from the point of view of this exercise, we attempted to look at those which were eminently quantifiable and did so and built it into our consideration, as you'll see later as we go into the algorithm. One of the things that public asks about all the time when they visit my station are the number of hours our volunteers commit to county service. And this particular chart simply illustrates in the left-hand side the numbers of hours committed to the service by volunteers. And what we did is assign a value to that system using the standards that Loudoun County uses to compensate its career staff. We applied that to the number of hours committed by volunteers to this county effort and developed a number that suggests that there's about $30 million in foregone salaries and benefits associated with volunteer service in the county, just as a rough measure of our contribution. Richard? We asked ourselves the question of what would happen if the county had to replace overnight, which we hope never happens, overnight, volunteer staff with career staff, knowing full well
if I may.
Yes, sir.
The full board has seen these types of numbers before.
Okay.
Can we get down to more of the proposal?
Absolutely.
So we can
sure.
try to do this.
Absolutely,
Thank
more
you.
Expeditiously. No
Thank
problem.
You. I think we all understand the benefits and have seen the numbers and what the volunteers bring. I would rather get to the proposal on the table.
I am delighted to hear that. Thank you, sir.
Great.
All right, we'll flip to the next slide. We'll get right to the nitty-gritty, and then we'll jump from there to the algorithm. So what we attempted to do was to look at this process from the point of view of what it costs to run the volunteer system in the county, and that's an effort that was undertaken for the very first time, to our knowledge. And what we developed was a sense that there was about an $8 or $9 million direct expense to operate in the county, the volunteer system, broken down by these three large categories: variable operating expenses, fixed operating costs, and capital costs. And we developed a process where we looked at the gap between the running of the volunteer system and income available to us, non-county income, all sources of income, and looked at the gap between the cost and the expenses to run the operation. And that developed the what we call the funding gap. On the right side of this slide, you'll see those numbers illustrated clearly, but we'll get into the more specific decomposition of those numbers when we talk about the algorithm. Flip forward, because we'll skip these two slides, because the chairman is quite right in terms of determining the cost of the system. Go to the key budget benchmarks. Just as a 20,000-foot view of our situation, these are some cost budget expenses listed in the county budget on the website. And at the time, we had a static level of funding for this system, the volunteer system. We're delighted to know that as of October 30th, we were informed that there would be a significant contribution made to that $5.172 million, for which we are grateful, and which also reduces the gap that this algorithm will illustrate going forward. Flip to the next one. Very simply, this is simply a rendition of the analysis of the costs of running the system against non-county income, illustrating the gap, and then taking the gap and applying the new county allocation, which has been enhanced by County Administrator Hemstreet's notification, reducing the funding gap to the volunteer system of about $500,000 when it was formerly quite large. Looking back just for a moment retrospectively on the current algorithm, which no one can explain, perhaps with the exception of John Sandy, if we tortured him and sat him in a chair and asked him to do it, it's hard to understand. No one can understand it. It's been broken for a period of time. And looking back on it, we discovered that as we applied this new business of looking at actual expenses, what we write checks for, what kind of income we have to mitigate against those costs, that in the past there were five companies that received more money than they needed in the prior algorithm, and a bunch of companies who were considerably underfunded in the former process. So we are attempting to right that balance in this process, as Chairman Croce indicated. Why don't we just skip Richard right to that one there. This one provides you an accurate depiction, as of 2 days ago, actually, of what that gap would look like company by company applying the new disbursements that County Administrator Hemstreet has made available to us against the current ongoing budgets. And you can see that there is a gap of about $480,000 remaining between expenses our companies engender and what we need to do to operate effectively. You'll learn more about that when we actually take a look at the algorithm itself. Finally, methodology to madness. This effort calls for a data-driven approach. It can be adjusted annually, it can be adjusted on the fly. It really doesn't matter what numbers you put in the top and turn the handle. When you turn the handle in this algorithm, it will create a disbursement consistent with the way it's been constructed, whether there's $5 million in it or $10 million in it. And it also reflects the ability that when there are changes in company circumstances, be it on the income or expense side, the algorithm is flexible and can reflect those disbursements accordingly. It is transparent. It is the first effort made to put numbers on and in an algorithm that are citable, transparent, and auditable. And this process is consistent with and comes at a time when the county has rightly moved to take a look at company expenses and audit those expenses on a more routine basis. So we welcome that effort as well. Richard, I'm going to turn it over to you if you'd like and show the committee a little bit about how the algorithm works. If we can work our way through your technology here, we'll be in good shape. There we go.
Okay, fundamentally, we've got tabs that...
Oops, hit the button.
Yeah, microphone.
All right. Fundamentally, This looks at expenses in the three categories, capital, fixed operating, and variable operating. Those are tabs to the right. Then we have the non-county income here in a tab. And we aggregate in a cost summary the expenses, and then finally come to the allocation engine. Here we look at the aggregate of the non-county income and against the total expenses to calculate a funding gap by company and in aggregate across the system, which is this number here, just about $6.5 million. And then we calculate a percentage of funding gap by company. So, for example, Leesburg Fire at 6.6, and that's simply a division of the funding gap for Leesburg Fire of $430,000 divided by that $6.5 million across the system. This funding gap percentage is used to apply the funds, the county funds, by company. That's the 30,000-foot level view of how the algorithm works.
Great, thank you. We do have that in our packet. It's a bit of an eye test there. You have to kind of do this to figure it out, but I did try to spend some time manipulating it. Is that your presentation? Thank you. Let me just say up front, I just want to thank you all for all your hard work. It is a complex issue, and I couldn't agree more that the current formula is broken. We'll just call it that. And that's why the board has taken this up. There's the unfunded gap. I agree with you. Probably one of the most challenging things for us in this job is everybody needs more money, whether it's the sheriff or the teachers, the schools, roads, all public safety, and that's our biggest challenge. And to provide that at the same time while trying to keep the tax rate at some measure of control. So it's a very difficult balancing act for us. I have a couple questions. I'm going to open it up. Who was on the president's stakeholders group? There were five people, is that correct?
No, sir. The president's group consisted of presidents from every volunteer company in the county.
You had every one of them on this group?
Every one of them. It was a committee of 16.
That wasn't clear in our packet.
Plus maybe a treasurer or two or a vice president. The meetings were open to senior officers of the
company. You know, let me ask it differently. Was there a subcommittee for algorithm development?
Yes, there was.
That's my question.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, yes.
Who was on that?
Members were the following.
And
they represented companies large and small, east and west.
Can you say what companies?
Yes, absolutely.
It wasn't in our packet. Something I think we'd all like to know who was represented here.
There were two subcommittees. The cost analysis subcommittee was chaired by Aaron Kahn of Company 14 and include Rob Burke of 10, Ed Carmichael of 8, Glenn Compton of Company 13, and Ed Peters of Company 17.
Percival, Luck, 14, Percival, 10, Luckett's, right? Who else?
Correct.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Would it be helpful if instead of using station numbers, they said the company?
Yes,
names?
Would you like to have?
Extrapolate them if we're slow enough.
Okay.
No.
All right. The algorithm subcommittee consisted of Richard Wolf from Company 1, Bernie Butler from Company 7, Sue Johnson from Company 14, Bon McCready from Company 25, Brian Phelan from Company 6, and David Short from Company 11 and 18.
And which subcommittee was that?
That was the algorithm.
The algorithm, okay.
Yes. Again, big, small, large, small. And actually, when we put these subcommittees together, I asked for volunteers to join them and tried to, you know, make sure we had good representation.
Well, it looks like you had small and large, east
yes.
and west.
Yes, sir.
So, okay. Let me open up the committee, and then I'll come back over here. Mr. York, Jr.
Thank you, gentlemen, and I'll repeat what Chairman Bona has said. Thank you very much for your time on this. My question to you, and I'm not trying to infer anything in this question, I just want to further understand. It looks like we just simply taken total expenses, total funding, and we're looking at what the gap is. Is that what else is in there?
That's not quite it.
That's a good cliff note version, yeah.
Richard, go ahead.
Richard?
Actually, that is quite it. It's but yes, so we look at total expenses.
Okay, so it's a very simple way of looking at it, and
yes,
I appreciate
absolutely.
The simplicity. It makes it much easier. My question, and this is what I just don't, hopefully doesn't get taken wrong by any company. What I want to ensure that what we're not missing is perhaps somebody whose expenses may be more than another company's, but the company who is less is actually doing more calls. And so my question is there a way to take the call volume and actually what that given company is doing into the equation of the algorithm to understand perhaps more where the money should go? Just a curiosity.
Yeah, actually, it's implicitly resident in the expenses, the call volume, because your fuel costs are what they are as a function of your call volume. We did do, at the request of one company, we did do a sanity check for their call volume as a rescue company against another rescue company in the county, and a comparison of what the algorithm generated in terms of allocation. And that held up. We also compared across rescue and fire for a similar analysis. And again, the algorithm held up to that comparison. Okay.
So pretty much what you're saying is, and to just make sure I'm just trying to repeat what I understood you to say, is that if I looked on this chart and took those companies that have the higher cost, basically it's going to reflect a higher demand on that company to provide the service. Then providing the services, they have more call volume.
In general, yes, and when you look at the variable operating costs, which is where you're going to see most of the call volume impacts, you definitely see it there.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Did you, in that same calculation, did you reflect capital costs? For example, some companies run company-owned apparatus, some run county-owned, some run a county-owned station, some run a privately, the company owns the station. How did that get factored in?
Absolutely. That got factored in under our capital costs. And so those who own equipment and have payments for that equipment, whether it's fixed equipment or movable equipment.
Did you look at the future at all? Or what was your snapshot?
Okay, so the snapshot was to look at, on capital costs, was to look at those who own stations and have station costs. We collected those costs and included them. Those who own apparatus, we collected the associated costs with the payments on those on that apparatus, as well as the maintenance on the apparatus, and then we looked at, from a future planning perspective, we looked at phasing out the apparatus payments and replacing them with set asides, what we call future capital reserves, that are based on a current service provided and an apparatus replacement schedule per county FRGs.
Supervisor Letourneau.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is that, from your standpoint, there's really no differences in how these individual companies are actually run. And I have a little bit of a hard time believing that, because what this system is doing is, if there are any efficiency differences between systems, it's wiping those out. And in a sense, it's punishing the company that might be a little bit more efficient in its expenditures by only basing this on expenditures. If, let's put it this way, it would appear that it creates a disincentive to reduce expenses, because if the funding formula is simply based on a gap, the higher the expenses get, the bigger the gap will get, the more money you're going to get to cover that. And so I guess my question is it really true that there are no companies out there that are perhaps simply run more efficiently than others from an operating standpoint?
Sir, I think one of the companies who is in support of this raises, as a criticism of the process, that the funding gap that's being identified now is one that doesn't show the true cost, because they have operated efficiently and they have withheld the ability to spend money, so that if we were to do it differently, if we were to sit down and do a prospective method, we might find that funding gap is actually larger than it is. Mm-hmm. So this, you know, I see this thing as a pair of shoes. It's a new pair of shoes. It's going to be tight, and it's going to hurt some, but, you know, we're going to break it in at some point. This is a model that gives you the opportunity to measure things today in a way that you truly understand, and a way to be able to make adjustments in the future as you need to. And that if people begin to spend at a pattern differently than they have spent before, it will become identifiable. And it needs to be looked at, and it needs to be justified. And if it can't be justified, then that funding doesn't necessarily need to be forthcoming.
Was there an effort to look at the actual cost per run? of each company?
No, there was not. That was not the approach that was taken. And if I could extend Chairman Croce's comments with respect to the first part of your question, in a cash-constrained environment, such as we've been operating in for the last decade at least, it is extremely hard to operate inefficiently. You're forced to operate efficiently. Have there been mistakes made and expenses that shouldn't have been? Probably. But the reality is we've learned as a system, and the expectation, because this was a subject of significant conversation in the first couple of algorithm subcommittee meetings, the expectation is that, you know, the reality is the expenses are indicative of what it actually costs us, or less than what it actually costs us to provide the service, and so we could use those to calculate a funding gap.
But if there's no cost per run analysis, you don't really know if the expenses are, in fact, indicative of what it's actually costing each company.
That is correct.
Okay.
Chairman York, you wanted a quick follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to kind of respond to Mr. Croce's statement, I think this question is probably more appropriate for you, Mr. Hemstreet. If we adopt this algorithm and go forward with it, if we notice that somebody is out of line or a company is out of line in how they're spending, there is nothing to say that the Board of Supervisors can change something in terms of the funding per that company until a situation is corrected. Would that be correct?
That is correct.
Thank you.
If I could add to that, the intent here is on an annual basis for us to collect a new set of numbers and to rerun the algorithm. As we collect that new set of numbers, we are anticipating that there would be a subcommittee or a subgroup of the presidents, possibly to include county staff, that would review and vet the numbers and would then be in a position to demand explanations for untoward data that that doesn't make sense from
there's a lot of factors can go into that, especially with some of the population increases we have going on right now. So, yes. You know, their calls may shoot up significantly in certain areas. So, Supervisor Williams.
Thank you. Thanks, Chairman Bowen. And thank you, gentlemen, for your time tonight and all the effort. One question, let me start, but I want to kind of comment on something my colleagues have mentioned, but do you feel like there was ample time during the summer to do all the data collection and all the companies were given ample time to give a good sampling of the data to be able to recommend this algorithm?
I will respond to that and say that I am the one who put the heat on this and made it move at the pace at which it did. And the reason that I did that was because I believe that we need to make a fix to this in the current fiscal year and to not wait another fiscal year.
I agree. But
the answer to the question, sir, is we could always use more time.
Sure. I want to make sure that the algorithm we're recommending is accurate.
But I believe that the companies have had an opportunity to see this since September 24th. It's been in front of them. All the companies had an opportunity to participate in the process. It's been out there for them to be able to review and comment. I've made sure that I provided you all the comments, so that you know what's up and what's down.
No, I appreciate that, Chairman Croce, and that's kind of where I'm coming from. There was departments that were concerned about this recommendation, and particularly the one we represent here in the Ashburn community. They have significant concerns about this algorithm and the fact that the only thing that's being utilized is the expenses. And I think, tying to Supervisor Letourneau's point, say for example, you have to start somewhere. So if the expense for, you're saying, for one particular station is $600,000 this year, I guess the litmus test going forward will be, well, do they spend within that same range? And is that amount based on the core services, equipment maintenance and building maintenance and electric bills, or are people spending to the budget that they spent to last year because they want to get the same allocation? And I guess that's kind of a concern I have. It's not much different than federal agencies that basically spend what they have because they want to get the same allocation the following year. And that's kind of where my question is, sir.
Be aware, of course, that when we say expense, the system's based on expense. It's based on expense and income. There is a contribution made by each of the volunteer companies to this process that says, here's the income we bring to the table before we come with our hat in our hand and ask you for assistance. Right. So it's two things involved here. Secondly, The expenses and income items selected for the algorithm are a subset of the total number of expense items in a typical company budget. For instance, there were 21 categories of expense collected by this committee and collected in the first 3 weeks of this meeting, three different iterations of those expenses. Companies voluntarily and very forthrightly delivered those that information to us. It was an honest process. Mm-hmm. We went to a second year to verify the fact that there were no wild discrepancies from year to year in terms of expenses and costs. Mm-hmm. And we are aware of the fact that, yes, there's this temptation to think that, well, we can put more diamond plate on one truck and we'll send more expenses. It was apparent as we collected the income information to start with, the expense information to start with, that people understood what everybody else was doing and could spot those kinds of things. So we kept off the table those kinds of issues and budget items that could reflect excessive spending or extra spending not necessary to provide basic core services to the county.
Right.
So, again, we want this to be an auditable process. We think it fits neatly with respect to what's coming along next January and there on out for company expense audits. My books are wide open. We're delighted to open our books, and you'll see whether we're diamond plate in our trucks.
Right. No, I think you understand where I am with my question.
And I do.
Really, we're trying to help the stations that are challenged, and so they can keep, you know, for example, Leesburg. Can you know have excellent fundraising, whereas Luckett's maybe is more challenged. And so, are we creating kind of a system that would necessarily disincentivize companies that have had strong backgrounds and strong histories of being able to do fundraising and being able to do things that maybe the others can't, and them saying, well, you know, we've got the allocation. So you I think you understand where.
The concern is
with the current recommendation.
We do, and when we're concerned about fundraising because it eats up an enormous amount of time. One of the pieces of data on one of those presentation slides we skipped over was the amount of time committed by volunteers to do fundraising, and if we applied compensation, the hourly compensation rate to that amount, we would be in a negative position with respect to the amount of money we raise given the number of hours we have to spend raising that money. So we've kind of kept fundraising netted out and on the side. But respect the fact that it's something that provides companies that can do that and do it effectively the extra resources they need to be able to spend the money on the special things they need to spend it on.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Reed.
Thank you. I first want to really thank Richard Wolf and you, Mr. Quinn, and Neil for the time and effort you put into this, because this was a kind of a tight process, because we did stipulate back in July that we wanted this done for this fiscal year. So I don't want to take away from any of the work that you did on this, and I want to thank you, Richard, for coming and explaining, you know, what you did with this chart. Couple questions. Does the algorithm cover the cost of purchasing and maintaining all, like, fire and rescue apparatus currently paid for by the volunteer companies? Like some companies have boats. Would it cover? Does that include it?
It is not. We, as a subcommittee, decided on which apparatus were essential, and that is in part directed by the county service plan. And those are the apparatus that are included in the future capital reserves, the set aside amounts that are dimensioned as part of the capital costs. Things like boats and ATVs and et cetera, and serves and excess apparatus that some stations currently maintain are not included.
Okay, so there's never, our rescue people don't go out to the Potomac River ever or lakes? Have we had any calls, Chief Brower, on water in this county recently, or is it just not that often?
Seasonally, we do have them throughout the county. We, Hibbs Bridge, Philemon area, most notably is there. We have multi stations responding on those types of incidents, specific water rescue, yeah.
So, but yet it's not in your fire and rescue plan, so it's not considered essential apparatus?
Well, I can't speak to the specific area in the service plan that identifies that. We clearly do maintain a swift water capacity here as a frontline service, but, I don't know how they viewed that in that context.
Now, in terms of, expenses, let's say a company paid $500,000 for an ambulance and had no financing payments. I mean, how does that show as an expense in the algorithm, or does it not?
That would not show in the algorithm. And companies that are in a position to do just that, pay cash for apparatus, have been among the companies who have been overfunded for the last few years and thus have the cash reserves to do so.
Okay, so therefore then cash reserves are sort of a penalty. If you accumulate cash and you have reserves, that works against you?
I would say it's a measurement of relative financial strength well beyond the capabilities of other companies.
Gotcha. Now, was this algorithm reviewed by, was it reviewed by the full President's Committee? Did they ever vote to approve it or not? No, the Fire and Rescue Commission did, but did the President's Committee take a vote on this?
We presented it to the full system. It was presented to everyone. It was put out as a comment period for 30 days so that everybody had an opportunity to do it. I conducted, in my mind, I conducted this as a virtual meeting that was open okay. to everyone.
So they were polled instead of having an actual meeting where they sit up there and they...
Well, they had the opportunity to comment online and through email to okay. present that, and there were responses made to each of those.
Were there alternative algorithms looked at?
There were alternative algorithms considered at the very first meeting of the algorithm subcommittee, but none were actually developed.
Okay. All right, very good. Well, I do have some concerns, and I think it probably goes back to our mandate to the group to try to implement this in the current fiscal year, because it's going to leave some companies without any money, potentially. So I guess I'll turn that over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Supervisor Reed. Yes, Mr. Delgado.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Board of Supervisors, through the Fire, the Reform Commission, commissioned the President's Committee of the different units to get together and come up with a recommendation. So I just want to say thank you for the work that you're doing, and that the Board asked you to do this work, and that you come in and give us that report. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for leading that reform and producing this product for the public record. And for the public record, I would like a copy of the presentation, because it was not in my packet, and it does summarize some of the operational necessities of how you run and how you work together. So I'd like that electronic.
Heather, can you get that too?
Yes, Supervisor Delgado, that's provided as a handout in front of you. It was brought today's meeting at 5, and it'll be posted online tomorrow. And we can send out a copy to everyone.
Yeah, send out a copy, because there's some supervisors that are not present for this meeting. Thank you. And, you know, the capital costs, I mean, you know, some people come into the boardroom, God bless them, they don't know the history of this. Mr. York and I were sitting at a meeting one time, and we were looking at a capital improvement budget, and we said, what's that in there? We really need an improvement for the fire and rescue unit, not what was already on that CIP. And so a couple of years ago, in the previous term, Mr. York put it on the budget, and this current board approved it. Lo and behold, a 2007 bond-approved item for a couple of million dollars was shipped over to Ashburn so that they could do some work immediately. So this business, this history of Sterling, I heard the question, the issue, a statement by one of the presidents, some of us, meaning the presidents, forbear on some of their capital expenditures. And Sterling forbore in deference to Middleburg, in deference, in this case, this term, to Ashburn. Mr. Chairman, colleagues, 2007, 2013, that's 6-7 years of forbearance on the part of Sterling for a capital improvement that they began down that process, God bless them, in the year 2006 to get it on the 2007 bond approval. So my point, Mr. Chairman and colleagues, is that there is a lot of work that goes on here. Imagine the forbearance on the part of a team, obviously, here of presidents that work together. And Mr. Ashburn, you get that $3 million because we worked on it so many years ago. And I look forward to the 2014 bond that this committee and the board, God bless them, will put together for that eventual proposal for Sterling Fire and Rescue.
Thank you, Mr. Delgado. And let me do point out that Ashburn had severe growth during that time period. They're in a station built in 1943 with cinder blocks, and they are going to raise $3.75 million of the 7 point whatever required to build their new station. So, you know, I'd say they're pulling their own weight.
I do take exception to one comment, and that is that those that could pay cash for an apparatus were overfunded for a long time. I think it just means they have good ability to raise funds. I think it means that they manage their funds wisely and invested, and therefore they created reserves. I don't think it's an issue of overfunding in those particular cases, because we know which companies those are.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to ask a question on the algorithm.
As soon as I got it, I'm going to try to get a motion on the table.
Okay. Well, I like the algorithm because it makes sense for both the money you allocated and the money that you didn't allocate.
Thank you. I do have some issues here, and I'll make a motion, and then I'm going to just give a quick opening. I'm going to move that the Finance, Government Service, and Operations return the Fire Rescue Funding Algorithm distribution item to the Fire and Rescue Commission for further review, discussion, and a subsequent recommendation. This review should focus on elements such as number of calls run, number of active members, the complement of volunteer-owned first-out apparatus, and capital expenditures such as volunteer-owned stations versus county-owned. The funding algorithm should not focus on actual expenditures, but consider expenditures over a several-year period with a focus on financial numbers and future capital requirements. The funding algorithm should not focus on investment income or capital proffer income, as those proffers are specific to growth in a particular company's services area. I further move that the Finance, Government, Service Operations Committee recommend to the full Board of Supervisors that the County Administrator be directed to continue to distribute the remaining FY14 funds per the formula in existence on July 1, 2013, and that the supplemental funding of $726,105 not be distributed until a new funding distribution algorithm is approved by the full Board of Supervisors. Seconded by Supervisor Williams. I know a lot of work went into this, and there's no perfect answer. I understand that, too. I really do. But at the same time, I think that this algorithm, as simple as it is, provides a lot of disincentives. In my business, there's a contract type that's illegal. It's called cost plus a percentage of cost. In other words, my profit's determined based on, as a percentage of my cost. All my incentive is to drive my costs off to increase my profit. And I think when you base an algorithm off of basically expenses, you're not doing anything to promote fiscal responsibility. I think by including investment income as a factor, you're telling those units and companies that did invest prudently that, well, that doesn't matter. We're going to redistribute the wealth. And when you start accommodating for fundraising ability, again, I think we're creating a model to redistribute the wealth. And I do agree it needs to be on need, and that's why if we look at things like call volumes, first out, these types of things, and put a focus there and try to, and Supervisor Letourneau's point's very well taken about, okay, what is your cost per call? Can we try to apply those? I think we have to go back, and maybe it's not as simple as what you have here, and I know so much work went into it. Not all the companies do agree either. I'm not sure we'll ever be unanimous, no matter what we come up with. But I think we've got to go back and look at making sure the system incentivizes folks for strong fiscal management. The only other point I'll bring up at this point in time is that make sure we want to get this done. We all agree we want to get this done. That's why I made the second part of the motion, was so we keep distributing funds right now. But I could have made a motion just distribute the $726,000 equally, but you know, we had that debate once, then we had a debate to do it a different way. None of them ever got through the full board, so we didn't seem able to do that. So I've made the motion to just simply say, let's apply it to the new algorithm. I don't think this is going to take a great amount of time, but as it is right now, I think there are some very strong objections from some of the companies, and they're very valid criticisms, and that's why I've come forward with this motion. Mr. Reed.
Yes, I would like to offer a friendly amendment to, right after the word review, in the second sentence where it says this review, comma, which, you know, shall be in public session and duly advertised. There was a concern raised about, you know, I don't know if it's valid or not, but there was a concern raised about, you know, I guess what I'm thinking is that you have a lot of companies, but you also have auxiliaries that are at stake here. And I just think that there should be.
Let me understand clearly which meetings you're referring to, the commission.
The algorithm committee.
Well, the commission's meetings, they're open meetings, correct?
Yes, of course.
So you're board appointed, you're subject to open meeting laws. Those committees should be subject as well to open meeting, correct, Mr. Hemstreet?
Only if we stipulate, I believe.
Not according to Jack in the way that it was done.
Mr. Chairman, if I,
yes, please,
if I understand Supervisor Reed's friendly amendment correctly, the way that this was handled was the chairman of the Fire Rescue Commission asked the presidents to come back as a loose committee. That was not an official committee of the Fire Rescue Commission and was therefore not subject to FOIA. I believe what Mr. Reed is requesting be added is a requirement that any place where this is formally discussed, that that be a public meeting and formally advertised, if I understand where you're going.
Yes, if we can do that, though. That's the question.
What's your take on that? Is that something you're, is it possible for you to do?
You know, our philosophy is to do things in the open, and I think that's what we've tried to do. If you want to make a requirement that these all be done under public notice, well, certainly that could be done, and we'll do that. I have a different concern.
Let's stick to the friendly amendment for a moment. Is it going to slow your process down? I mean, we're going to have to go out and advertise these, and we want you to move fast. And so, I'm sorry. Microphone, please.
I think, well, we would welcome, the meetings were open to all. Minutes were provided. Minutes were done on all subcommittees, algorithm subcommittee as well as the others.
Were
we
all
can
the
do
companies
it.
Notified that there was a meeting of the algorithm?
They all knew exactly what the schedule was.
Okay. Mr. Reed, it sounds like the friendly amendment isn't necessary. If you feel very strongly about it, you can offer it up as a formal amendment. But at this point, if you're advertising to all the companies,
I would just say that the board requests that the Fire and Rescue Commission and the President's Committee just notify all the companies that there's a meeting of the Algorithm Committee. That's all.
And you're already doing that, correct?
We are doing that now, and we'll make sure that we do it, and we'll copy you.
Good. That'd be great. Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you. Let's work committee members first. Mr. York.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to hesitantly support the motion. I better understand this evening what has been proposed to us, and it's simplification. And I appreciate the concerns of others, and at the end of the day, somebody's going to be, regardless of what we do, somebody's going to be happy and somebody's not going to be happy. The more we put into the formula, the more it's going to be harder to understand and to distribute the funding as proposed. And what I have stated to all of you over and over and will continue to state is that I hope whatever we do, that there's not a disincentive to just simply quit and not have a volunteer system. And the more stress we put on these individuals, you know, volunteerism is great and we support it, but volunteers, when they feel like they're not necessarily always being given support, that is a big concern. And simply, at the end of the day, I'd rather be paying that $8 million expense bill than the $22 million FTE bill. And I hope we can keep that into mind as we work through this. And gentlemen, it's a huge task, and hopefully we can you can come back with something that will make the board members a little bit more comfortable in going forward and ensuring. But just note, and I apologize if I harp and beat on this, but it's only partially because I've watch this in the many years I've been with the county. You know, in the eastern end of the community, we had proffers that were going to the companies, but that got done away with. And as we have transitioned into the type of community that we have, it's been harder for the companies to fundraise. And we have to recognize that. And I'm kind of concerned that what I'm hearing tonight is that some companies that may be objecting to this are actually some of the companies that are in a better position to fundraise than some of the other companies because of the density of the population that are given in these areas. And again, Mr. Chairman, I'll support this and see what comes forward. But understand that at the end of the day, I don't think anybody's going to necessarily be totally happy with what we get. And at some point, hopefully, we can move on.
Supervisor Letourneau.
Thanks. Yeah, I understand what the chairman's saying. The inverse of that is that those companies also are the ones that have been asked to grow fastest and have the most strain put on them. I'm kind of a free agent from a parochial standpoint here, because the only company that operates in my district no longer has volunteer fire service, in part because of that, which is Arcola, and now is only running volunteers with rescue. And obviously we hope to be able to maintain that, but they're struggling there too. And so I'm just trying to look at this objectively, and what I'm kind of hung up on is having a little bit greater comfort with this efficiency issue that I raised, with ensuring that we're measuring not just purely expenses, but also how much is actually costing each company to run a call. And I think that's information we don't have. I understand there's a desire to get this done quickly, but I think we also need to make sure we do it right. And we put in place something that we can continue to work on as a framework and continue to add upon. There's kind of an interesting issue here, too, which is that we're moving to an EMS billing system. And there's also an algorithm associated with how those funds will be distributed. And there would be some logic to having a similar approach here. I mean, we're looking at essentially paying back the companies that are, as the highest percentage, paying back the companies that are actually making the call. Those are the ones that will be receiving the fee for service. And that is, by the way, going to be a significant infusion into the system, unlike anything we've seen. And so I'm really optimistic about that. But there is some logic in looking at that system, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts on that, whether that factored in at all, in looking at this process. The last thing I was just going to say was just a question. We are using now the commission's put forward the $22 million in labor expense number. Is that a number that's coming from a staff analysis or just purely commission analysis?
That was a number that came from taking each individual apparatus in the company that's staffed by volunteers, for the number of hours staffed by volunteers, and saying, okay, now if it had to be staffed by career, what would the minimum staffing for career be? And that was what we would like,
and I don't know if this needs to occur as a result of the motion or a friendly amendment on this, but I would like, as we enter our budget session, to have a complete, fully vetted analysis done by staff of exactly what the compensation provided or the amount, the value provided of the volunteer services are, so that when we do start getting into this, we have a number that has been mutually agreed on by everybody. Is that possible, Mr. Hampshire?
Yeah, we can. I mean, if that's the pleasure of the committee, we can certainly do that.
Supervisor Letourneau, are you getting at the cost side of the equation too?
Is that? I am. Yeah, I'm trying to understand.
This gets you the hours times.
Yeah,
gives
I'm
you
to see
revenue
the whole
estimation.
Picture.
Right, but if I understand, Mr. Chairman, I believe that number was calculated by the volunteer community. I believe you're asking for county staff to do that calculation.
Yes, and perhaps go even deeper than they did. Yes.
In the end, there is a significant benefit. I think we all realize that. We could argue the number. I think it would be good, though, to understand both sides of that equation. Just finally, we all agree that there's a number out there.
But it could be higher. I mean,
point of inquiry. Are you saying that you would want to wait until we get EMS data first?
No. It says nothing to do with EMS. It's part of the budget.
Okay, because that, you know, that's going to
change
things. The EMS
is a whole different issue where we're looking to supplement with additional revenue, not offset anything they're already getting. It would be additional monies to the companies.
Can I just ask one question of the people here?
Are you done, Supervisor Letourneau? Mr. Reed?
Would it help, since we're asking you to do more now and you're volunteers, would it help to have some staff time involved?
We ask staff to do that analysis.
No, for this over here.
I appreciate that question because, quite frankly, that was the comment that I was going to make. We are volunteers, and the amount of work that you just put on the table there, I think, is a little bit beyond what volunteers are going to be able to do. So I would think that this additional work would need to be turned over to staff, and the volunteers would be happy to vet the information that comes back. But to create a to ask these people to do this, I think, is going a little bit beyond what we're asking volunteers to have to do.
Unfortunately, the recommendation really needs to come from the volunteers, and that's why we've done this. Otherwise, we'll have staff create it, and we'll vet it over and over, and I think we're going to make the process even longer.
I'm referring to the gymnastics, if you will, the machinations of gathering the information.
Well, some of that, Mr. Hemstreet, could we assign some staff to the commission to help them with that type of endeavor?
Absolutely. I mean, if the request is from the commission to provide staff to help with putting the data together, we can certainly assist with that.
Do we have to put that in the motion?
Offer it up as a friendly amendment.
I'll offer it as a friendly amendment.
And I'll accept
allow
that.
Some staff
so
time.
Williams
to...
second accepts it.
We can certainly do that. I do want it to be clear, though, that the algorithms itself and the recommendations on the algorithms are coming from the Fire Rescue Commission and organized however
right.
the commission wants it.
Data gathering, all these types
what
of
I'm,
things.
What I'm suggesting is that the ratios, the metrics that you're looking for, that be gathered and be calculated by the staff, and that come and be put into the algorithm that has been developed by the folks here.
Well, part of your discussion is the algorithm itself.
Understood.
Not the current algorithm. That's where some of our issues lie and why this other motion was made. So we can get the data, but part of it's there has to be adjustment to the current algorithm.
I'd also like to know, Mr. Chairman, that just because this is going to go to the full board December 4th, which
no, it's
is
not.
Almost
no, done. No. The motion returns it back to this committee when they're ready.
But the move to recommend to the full board that the county administrator be directed to distribute the remaining.
That was just to distribute the current FY14 disbursements, which are done quarterly, and we're just saying, we're essentially saying keep doing it, keep sending the money.
So we don't have to bring that to the full board December 4th. Okay, so then you can get started right away. Thank you.
Okay, Supervisor Delgadio.
Thanks. So, Mr. Chairman, it is your understanding that the President's Committee will be putting this together. Is that your understanding legislatively?
I believe
it would
be your subcommittees, correct? Well, staff is going to assist in pulling the data together.
Right. So I'm directing to the chair.
The algorithm subcommittee, I would assume, would be the one you would look to.
Right, and to the algorithm committee, with the deference of the chairman, I would like to ask, is your understanding that you're going to continue to work on this? Is that your understanding with the help of staff?
To be honest with you, the first thing I'm going to do is put a call out to folks to see if they're willing to continue to
right.
participate. And
right.
it's quite possible that I'm going to get, you're on your own, Nick.
Right.
There's been a lot of effort put into this.
How many members were on the algorithm subcommittee? Was it five, seven, six?
Six. And speaking for myself, I cannot commit the kind of energy, nor do I have the kind of expertise.
Well, I'll leave it up to you how to convene that subcommittee. Right. It doesn't have to be the same six individuals.
But I'm letting you know that as the representative of company presidents
right.
and what it takes to bring that group together. And
I understand.
To raise,
I understand.
And consensus
and really,
on an
this
approach.
Is an important item. There's this will allocate money for many, many years to come. It's important that we get it right
and
that it's
Chairman,
fair and that it's fair. Please, sir.
And Mr. Chairman, that is really the focus of my remarks here. I think that you gave them 6 months to work on this, and Mr. Chairman, you had them come here, and they are not board members of the Board of Supervisors. They are volunteers. Mr. York made a fleeting reference to this. I obviously want to dwell on that. We don't want to give them the impression that we're fickle because, you know, I essentially see change opinions based on the give and take of the legislative debate. Heck, I changed my mind during board meetings several times, depending on Mr. Letourneau or Mr. Bono or Mr. York or Mr. Williams or Ken Reed or the other supervisors jumping in and saying something. So that's the nature of the government. That's the nature of being on the supervisors. You got to, okay, 5-4 or 6-3 or 8-1. But you guys, the chairman, I'm not going to get into the vote, but the vote was fairly clear. Give them the option of coming in with some recommendations or an algorithm. And you're, you know, going to vote one way or the other. And they've got to go back and try to get themselves together and give us back what they need. Now, they have legitimately the ability to do it mentally, and they have staff support, and they have the board's direction.
but do they physically, are they able to get their crowd together, which is like herding cats, just like us. Just like us, we got to herd cats. So you're asking them to herd cats. And, Mr. Chairman, would this be herding cats in time for the budget? Because they're not going to come back for the December 1 meeting.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Delgado.
I'm asking that question to the chair. That's going to be for the subsequent meeting in January.
This motion brings it back to this committee when they are ready to bring it back.
And when is that?
I don't know. It depends on when the work's complete.
Right, but why not when the Board of Supervisors is meeting, because we're meeting on December 4th. Right.
It's not going to be ready for the December 4th meeting. And then, matter of fact, this is the last committee meeting before the December 4th board meeting. Our next committee meeting is in December.
Okay.
Okay. Supervisor Turner, you wanted to do a quick add-on.
Yeah, speaking of on the fly here, I almost wonder if maybe we're approaching this wrong, because what I'm hearing is you all got together, we gave you direction, you came forward, you gave us a recommendation. It's now up to us to decide whether we like that recommendation or not, or if we want to change it. At the end of the day, it's a policy decision by the Board of Supervisors, effectively.
Yep.
I feel like there's a little bit of, well, we sort of feel like we're going to have to accept your recommendation 100%, or we're not being supportive, which is not how I want this to go. But at the same time, it's our job to actually have to spend this money, and we have to go out and collect taxes from people. So I almost wonder if the best course of action here is to thank you for your service, and then have us and our staff go in and start changing this or adjusting it or tweaking it with all this data that we want involved, and then going forward with that. My concern is then that cuts you out of that final process, and I want you to continue to have input.
Right.
So is there some way that we can perhaps work this out and take this on as a board and have our staff do this and not put the burden completely back on you? Because you all have made your recommendation to us.
We need to hear from.
Yeah.
It could be done that way. Could we build it? And then you're going to have a review process by the commission, I would assume. Doesn't have to be, but then they're living with what we come up with.
Yeah.
And I don't think we want that to happen. I mean, we want you to like what it is. You know, it's very important. So could we go down that route? Let me get your view, and I want to get Mr. Hemstreet's view.
I think that we could be supportive of that opportunity as long as we had an opportunity to review it before the final decision was made. You know, the concern that I have about this is we're playing a zero-sum game.
Right.
And today you're hearing from the people who are in the red. And when we do the next iteration, there'll be different people who will be in the red, and you'll hear from them. You know, this is a zero-sum game. I want to go on record as saying how proud I am of the fire and rescue system presidents to be able to be put in a room and be asked to make a very tough decision and make a recommendation, and there was no blood, there was no acrimony, there was collaboration, there were hurts, there were concerns, but it was done in a highly professional way. And I think that if you take this process and you take what we've done and you find where you feel the flaws are and you make the adjustments and you find the metrics that you're happy with, and you come back with a recommendation, give us the opportunity to review it and give us the opportunity to share it with all the presidents the same way we shared this one. Give us the opportunity to have a comment period with the full system the same way we did this one. Okay? We can do that. It's not going to fix the problem in fiscal year 14. And let me just go on record as saying, everybody on that sheet who's in the green is already in the red. If they're in the green now from this new algorithm, it's because they're in the red working in the current formula.
We understand all that. Mr. Hemstreet?
You know, as staff, we can do whatever the board wants to direct us to do.
Isn't that wonderful?
There's no disagreement there, right?
Yeah, we have you doing a lot of things. That's why I'm asking the question.
I will say that, you know, I would place a lot of stock in what the President's Committee and the Fire Rescue Commission has come forward in, given the fact that it has been a lengthy process that has involved all 16 companies. It's as perfect as humans can make it, which means by definition it's not perfect. But I'm happy to go and follow up in whatever manner the board would like us to.
Mr. Turno, are you
I would
as a substitute, or is that an observation?
I would indeed offer it as a substitute that that staff proceed with a subsequent review and discussion and recommendation based on the input of the Finance Committee, and that it be shared with the Fire and Rescue Commission through and the President's Committee through the process by which the existing recommendation was reviewed.
Okay, is there a second to that motion?
Second
by Supervisor Reed. Opening.
Okay, I think this would be a cleaner way of doing this rather than asking the volunteers to go back and make recommendations, which they inherently won't exactly believe in because they've already brought to us the recommendations that they think. For my part, I'm more looking to validate some of these more than I am really change it. And I just don't feel prepared tonight to make a decision. I understand that this is only for 1 year, but it really isn't because I don't want to be doing this next year. I want to get it right the first time. Yeah. I think we can do this expeditiously. I mean, we don't pass a budget until first week of April. So, I mean, I think we can move on this and have staff work on it with the collective input of the board and then ensure that there's a proper comment and input period to get there. So I'm open to further tweaks of this motion if there needs to be some. I'm just doing this on the fly, which is always dangerous, but I'm trying to get us to a place where we're moving forward here based on where this discussion has gone.
No, I think this is a good alternative. I do need to offer up a friendly amendment. That's the second half of the motion that I originally made, which disperses the funds right now to them. So well, if you'll accept that as a friendly
amendment. I will indeed,
amendment,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Supervisor Williams.
Thank you, Chairman. And I appreciate Supervisor Letourneau's comments. And again, I'm being redundant here, but I certainly don't want the volunteers to say this is any slight. I think we've gotten a good work product. We just have some questions. There are some issues. I know for my part, I'm responding a little bit to the letter I got from our Ashburn folks. And I just want to kind of dig into those issues a little bit to get comfortable. So I hope the takeaway isn't that we're not being supportive of the volunteers. It couldn't be further from the case. I think we're just trying to be diligent in making sure that everyone's input has been, you know, heard.
Sure.
So my only question is for County Administrator Hemstreet, do you feel like you have the direction from us to be able to move this to where we're headed? Mr. Hemstreet, I'm not sure if we've kind of been talking for a while about this, and I guess didn't know if there was clarity on where you want us to go from here, or is that going to be some one-off meetings?
As I understand, well, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
As I understand the motion that is on the table, you would like staff to come back with more of a performance-based algorithm, in loose terms, is how I interpret the direction.
So, Attorney, you made the motion, so I'll let you.
I think that is basically correct, or at least some additional performance-based metrics that are perhaps testing some of this algorithm that's in front of us.
Okay, thank you. Chairman York, I know you have to leave it. I'm going to try to get this to a vote on the substitute motion. So I think
you
have a comment.
Again, I'll hesitantly support the substitute motion to allow the committee to go on this. But I hope we all understand we can't just – I understand trying to base and look at what company is costing them to do a run versus a number. But I also want to tell you the call runs for Sterling's a lot shorter than the call runs for Percival. And we've got to keep that all in mind in this. Again, make the formula just simple.
And I'll just make one quick remark, and that is that the current algorithm, which we all agree is terrible, has been in effect for many years now. And once we approve something, this new algorithm will probably be in effect for many years as well. It could be a decade. So it's very important that we take a little bit of time to get it right so that it properly benefits as wide a base as the volunteer system as we can possibly benefit. As I've said, as Chairman York said, not everybody's going to be happy no matter what we do here because it is complex. But the more we can make it palatable to as much of the volunteer base as possible, I think it's key that we do that. So we will look to make some adjustments. Based on this motion, it will come back to the commission, and you can take it to your president's stakeholders group or whatever, provide feedback, and then we'll get back to this committee and back to the full board. So, Mr. Turner, closing.
I think it's pretty well been covered. The only thing I'll add is I want to make sure when we do that, we do so with set time periods so that when it is available, it's provided to the commission. You're given a certain amount of time to comment. I just don't want it open-ended forever. You know, I mean, I think we have to set deadlines just as you did as you were moving forward. So I...
process-wise. Go ahead.
I'm kind of thinking that second part of that motion does need to go to the board on a fourth, because if the board held the funds, it can't be released until the corporate body releases it.
I'll divide the motion for the vote.
It doesn't need to be divided. It can still go to the board.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, the funds themselves have already been appropriated by the board.
Right.
So the standard process for disbursement of the funds is on a quarterly basis. So my interpretation of the motion is for us to just continue doing what the board has already authorized.
That's correct.
If the $726,000 were to be dispersed, that would have to go to the board, because that has been held by the board until this process is concluded.
If we're not dispersing any differently than what we've been doing, I would agree with you.
I don't believe this board changes that disbursement. The only thing that has been raised by staff as a concern is whether or not...
We got to vote. Okay.
Get out of here. Okay. Ms. Letourneau?
I'm done.
All right. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. The substitute motion passes unanimously. And Mr. York, I did slow it down for you. So, folks, we have one more item, but we've been going for 2 hours. Let's take about a 5-10 minute break, and we'll come back and wrap up. 5 minutes is good, and we'll come back so everybody can do a restroom break.
folks, let's take on the last item, item number 10, which is supplemental funding request for ERP system implementation. And Mr. Mays, Ms. Wickens, I think you've talked to the whole committee about this, right?
We did.
Okay.
We probably want to, you know, establish some public record, though, for anybody who's watching on TV.
Yep.
The over the last 15 years, it has become more and more obvious to county staff as time went on that our main financial systems in particular were growing past obsolete and were becoming less and less supportable. So starting in the early 2000s, we started putting in the in the capital budget, in this case in the capital asset preservation plan, system replacement for the financial systems, which is what led us to the ERP discussion we're having this evening. The issue is that the main financial systems that the county operates, the comprehensive assessment system, the taxation and treasury systems, and the financial accounting systems were all 30-plus years old, virtually unsupportable from the private sector. Most of the vendors had gone out of business, if there were vendors to begin with, rather than just systems that we had slowly but surely grown with the help of IT staff. We have gotten to the point by the late 2000s that really our entire support for those programs, which are essential to the core functioning of government, were supported by IT staff, all of whom had entered the most realistic window of retirement scenarios. And so we really were facing a point of no return on those systems. So under the previous board, we brought forward the idea of installing a new enterprise resource planning system.
Mr. Mays, with all due respect, we all know this history. We've had monthly updates in the committee. Can we get more to the modern day? And
yes, sir. But I just want to say that, you know, I'm establishing for the record there are people watching who are not aware.
I understand that. We've rehashed this in our quarterly report each time. So,
As we started that process, one of the things that I want to make clear is that we were replacing these systems for the county and for the school system both. It's not just one or the other. It was the two together. This large a contract, and we knew it was going to be a large contract, was going to require both, you know, major county and school investment and also some significant changes as time went on in business practices. Consequently, this is a project that has been jointly managed by the county and the school system. You know, primarily, of course, as always, your agents are the county administrator and the school board's agent is the school superintendent. But it's also, you know, impossible for them to manage a project of this size. So early on in the process, a steering committee was established. That steering committee currently consists of, there's been some evolution because people left and people came on, currently consists of course, myself and Ms. Wiggins, our counterparts in the school system, Ms. Burden and Ms. Huff, who's the deputy or assistant superintendent for human resources, the school's CIO. We also have Mrs. Neary sits on the steering committee. She inherited that when, for a period of time, she was managing the assessment process. Mr. Zern and Mr. Wirtz are the other main members of that committee. Mr. Legg is sadly for him, he is one of our, you know, the major staff of that committee, along with two gentlemen who are out in the audience who have been our program managers for much, if not all, of this process from the beginning. There has been a significant amount of outsourcing of project management over time because this is at a scale larger than county staff, you know, can or would want to attempt to manage. We had a consultant that initially came in and helped us figure out what we needed. Then that same consultant stayed on and assisted us through the acquisition of the systems. At that point, we hired a firm to actually be our program manager across all three of the major areas, the financial and human resources systems, the taxation system, and the treasury revenue systems. Those the resources they gave us wound up being insufficient, and then those staff left. We've evolved to the position that we have now with the two gentlemen who are assisting us in program management, and that's gone very well over that period of time. The Treasury and taxation system went live successfully earlier this year. The assessment system went live successfully earlier this year. There's still additional work that needs to be done in both of those systems. We're not completely done with them at this point, but we've had pretty good successes with those, especially the Treasury system. I think in particular that's been very successful. The financial systems went live July 1st. When we started this process, it was at the depth of the it was at the beginning of the Great Recession, as it's called. We were able to get the capital funding from fund balance to initiate this process. We knew that there were going to be thousands, if not tens of thousands, and I think the answer is probably tens of thousands of hours of county staff involved in the installation process. Along with the especially on the financial and accounting systems, there's at any given point in time, there's at least 40 consultants from our implementer on site. We had attempted, because there seemed to be no other choice at the time, to implement this using existing county staff rather than pulling them out of their current positions and dedicating them to the process. This is at a period of time when the county was undergoing substantial growth, and all of those people were pretty much fully tasked already with the actions that they perform on a day-to-day basis. So, in essence, we've asked many of our most valuable employees, especially in my shop, to do double duty over the last 3 years as part of this process. First, with the idea of preparing ourselves as best we could for just selecting a vendor. During the vendor selection process, there were 21 days, full days of, 24 full days of demonstrations that at least 30 to 40 staff attended. We prepared, I'm not sure I can remember off the top of my head, Donnie, how many requirements were specified as part of the contract?
For the three additions,
5,000. 5,000 were clearly identified by staff. We were trying to learn from the mistakes of our neighbors and try to do this right from the beginning. But we did make what is clear to us now a fundamental mistake in trying to do this with existing staff. We were successful in going live July 1st. We did so by burning out our staff. We also did so by truncating the important middle component of the process, which is the knowledge transfer from those 40 AST consultants to our DIT and Management and Financial Services staff. So we have the system. We can operate parts of it, but we still are catching up with fundamentally understanding how the whole thing works. So that part of it was a failure, and it has, and there's no question in my mind that the bottlenecks that were caused by insufficient staffing, insufficient initial and ongoing staffing, created delays and probably also change orders that we might not have had to do otherwise. It certainly is adding to the post-go-live support costs that we are currently experiencing with the vendors that are assisting us to make the systems function. By this spring, the steering committee realized that we had serious issues. By the end of summer, we realized that the next phase of the implementation, which is the human resources information system, which is As someone from the finance side, it hurts me to say this, but even more important than the accounting system, in that it's the system that actually pays, all 15,000 county and school employees. I mean, the last system we touched 600 people. This time we're going to touch 15,000 people on a regular basis. So we knew we didn't have sufficient resources to really go forward with the implementation of phase two. That we could not repeat the mistakes that we had made with phase one. The school system last month went forward and at the request of school staff did approve four positions in their finance and accounting office to provide both ongoing support for phase one and to be able to implement phase two. What we have before you tonight on the personnel side is our efforts to do the same. We've identified positions that are specifically tasked with, you know, with maintaining phase one. Previously, a lot of the maintenance was done more centrally in IT than the new system is going to require. The new system is going to require ownership of the data and the processes within the accounting shop itself. Also, we're looking for dedicated staff to assist us through the implementation of phase two. At least one, if not all, of those staff positions will turn into the same level of business analyst support that we're looking to for the phase one parts of the operation that have been implemented. We're asking for, as the item says, roughly $9.5 million. Some of that is personnel, but the vast majority of it is contract extensions, either with AST or with other vendors to assist us with this process. In many ways, we believe that the numbers before you are probably the worst case we can imagine at this point of what our costs will be as we go forward. But we heard you say, don't come back and ask over and over again, come back and tell us what you think you need up front. We believe, especially with the staffing changes that we're proposing, that we will not experience all of these costs. But at this point in time, we haven't begun phase two yet. We want to begin it January 1st, though there really are limited windows as to when. It's a 15-month implementation. There are limited windows in the calendar year when it makes sense to go live with a program like this. So we generally need to start it in the period between September and January. If we go any later than January, we run into the peak hiring time of the school system. That's a real problem for them because this is a school system that hires between 700 and 1,000 people every year. And their staff would be trying to do both things at the same time, and that's almost certain to end in trouble. If it takes longer than 15 months to do this, which again we think would happen if we're not fully staffed, we will be paying additional costs at the end of the process, just as we are at the end of phase one. I've kind of rushed through this, but that's a pretty good overview at this point of the problems we have. I'm
not sure that was a rush, but Ms. Wickens, would you like to add anything to that?
No, I think Ben did a really good job of highlighting, I think, everything that we've been through with this project thus far. I think it's been a very difficult project, but I think all ERP projects are difficult. I've said this before. I think you learn lessons as you go through, and we've certainly learned our lessons as we've gone through this. And I do agree with Ben that, you know, the biggest issue that we ran into in terms of some of the cost overruns are a direct result of not having enough resources right out of the gate to be able to manage some of the customizations and prevent some of the issues that we had in terms of knowledge transfer.
Okay, thank you.
One last thing. I mean, just in general, many of the delays that took place in the process, and delay in an installation like this costs money. I mean, time is money, and you're in this business, Ms. Mona. The same people who are trying to get the annual financial report out or close the books or those things are the same people that we needed to make decisions about the workflow and how the new system would look. And there just wasn't enough time, even with regularly 12 to 16-hour days on many of their parts, for us to be able to get those decisions made. And that was probably our greatest fundamental error. That was set at the very beginning of the process. And as I said, the second error that we made was not really understanding going into the process what the ongoing support costs of these kind of programs are. What we'd heard from everybody is, well, if you do it right the first time, it won't be so bad, but we've never actually found anybody who's done it so right the first time that it's not so bad once it's done.
Okay, thank you. The very first Finance Committee meeting when I got elected, and matter of fact, all of my colleagues up here except Supervisor Delgadio, we were briefed on this, and I said, almost all of them go way over budget, way over schedule, and they get requirements creep. So let's brief this every quarter to try to stay on top of it. And you did. But I think that there's a lot of blame to go around, and even on this board to a point, because I don't think we manage it at a discreet enough level from a board oversight standpoint. And we kind of saw this coming, but it kind of creeped out on us. And then all of a sudden, the floodgates have opened up. First question is, this essentially takes the project budget of, what was it, $25 million originally, and if I add all these increases, we're up to about 41.5 now?
Yes, sir.
So maybe about an 80% overrun at this point in time. So it's very substantial. I know time is money, but what are the consequences if I were to make a motion to have you come back next month with some additional materials, some additional information? And I'll make that motion as to specifically in a few minutes what it is after my colleagues speak. But if we delayed a month the decision of this committee, what impact would that have?
If we're to begin phase two, which is the implementation of the HRIS system, really and truly for this to be a success, I have to have additional staff. I do not believe it can be a successful implementation without it. I need to be hiring that staff now. I have ads prepared and ready to run. I need to be able to hire those people and get them on board as soon as possible. The longer you wait, the more we place on the personnel side, the more we place.
That's a general answer. Is it quantifiable? I know you have the ads ready. I've been told that. I don't want to say it was presumptuous, but it's a wise thing to do, because I know you need to get these people on board. But we've been doing this for a couple of years now. Is a month really going to make that much difference?
If we wait another month to make those final decisions, and I have to hold off hiring decisions until at that point, then January, because you know it's Christmas time at that point, then I would suggest that we delay implementation for a year.
For a month?
Yes, sir.
You want to delay a year?
Yes, sir. As I'm telling, as I tried to say earlier,
Ben, I find that hard to believe.
As I said earlier, it's a 15-month implementation. If we're not staffed correctly at the beginning, we will pay, you know, we're right now paying at least $500,000 to $1 million a month for post-go-live support costs because we didn't do it right the first time. Those costs will happen again, and they will happen we will still have staff involved in it, and it'll happen at the most crucial time for the school system perspective, not from the county perspective, but from the school system perspective of when they need to be out on the street hiring.
From a project schedule perspective, if we delay the decision to move forward, we have to give AST 30 days notice prior to them actually coming back on site. So already, if we don't make a decision sometime in December, they would not be able to come on until January. So if we delay and say we don't do anything until January, you know, we have to get the information together and delay till January. That pushes the schedule for a go-live into May. If we keep pushing it, it pushes it into the summer when they start hiring, in which case it does make sense to delay it by a year, but it depends on how much we're pushing it by.
All right, let me give you where I'm trying to go here. I don't think there's a stomach up here to hand you $10 million tonight, okay, and say, here's a recommendation of the full board to give you $10 million. If we were to ask you to come back, and it could possibly be to the full board, let me back up. You're recommending fund balance for most of this.
Yes, sir.
And we aren't having the fund balance discussion until the December Finance Committee meeting. But based upon initial numbers I'm hearing, this is about 25% of our fund balance expectation. Is that probably a good estimate?
Maybe 20, but yes, sir.
All right, 20 to 20. Oh, good. That means it's going up.
I hope.
Well, we all hope.
We're not closed yet. So.
But what I would like to see done, and I can make a motion this way, but I want to understand the consequences is, and we talked about this on the phone, and you should have this. If you don't have this, it's one of the reasons this project has problems. But you should be able to come back to this committee with discrete milestones where there are technical objectives as to what we're going to accomplish, performance objectives. There are schedule dates, and there's the price of meeting that milestone. So that the project is broken down into some discrete elements so that this committee, if we're going to give you all this money, we've got to have oversight. I mean, I don't think anybody would disagree when we have an 80% overrun. And the only way we can have any real oversight, because I haven't been able to do it on those quarterly packets because there's not enough there, is for us to have well-defined milestones, well-defined deliverables, and a budget for each one of those. And I would assume you have that because that's how you manage almost any project like this. So what would it take for you to have that for us? If I make a motion to say, we'll send it to the board with no recommendation, but I expect you to brief those milestones and all that, and we'll make a motion to bring it back to the committee, is that doable? And the second half of that question is, could we appropriate the money based on those?
We have a project schedule for phase two of the project. And in some cases, when you take a look at each one of these clearly defined items that are in here, you can align them based on dates. And we started doing that exercise today because we heard what you said on the phone.
Right.
So we started aligning them today and came up with periods of time, like knowing, for example, that in order to get us started in December, to move us along and to get the resources, we would need about $3 million to get us kicked off out of the 10. But we can come back in December, and we can go through and we can align the project plan with the resources that we have here. I mean, the requests that we have here.
Yeah, and the part of our problem is timing. Because we don't have a second meeting this month, a full board meeting, because of Thanksgiving. The next full board meeting is on the 4th of December, but the next finance committee meeting is, I think, the 12th maybe, somewhere around there. And then there is no second December meeting because of the holidays. So we'd be shoving this all the way to January, which I don't think any of us want to do. So would it be feasible in the full board item, if we send it to the full board, to come back with all of that, and then part of the recommended motion would be that you will brief the Finance Committee on progress against those milestones from a CS&T perspective, so we can watch this thing as we're moving along with these new funds, and there would be appropriation points along the way.
One of the issues that we discussed, and I think it has great merit in terms of achieving what you want to do, would be for, you know, as much of this funding as possible to be put into a contingency, and the use of that contingency would come to the either the finance committee.
Yeah, that would be a great way to do it, similar to what we do with the legal contingency.
Yes.
Okay.
And we do know that out of the $10 million, like I said, that right out of the gate, just to finish phase one and to get ready for phase two, we need $3 million right up front. So that would be the first thing that we would need is – that would be a first milestone, is to get ready in preparation. And then after that, these are the dollar amounts that are associated with those milestones.
Okay. Supervisor Williams?
Thank you. And thank you for your feedback. I mean, you understand kind of maybe the hesitation. We were all briefed. We don't just want to give, you know, we gave a $25 million check, and now that didn't work out. But I guess I wanted to kind of get into the weeds a little bit on what we need now. And it sounds like where the schools are is applying the four FTEs to really to be able to support phase one. And so I guess that's where I'm coming from. And the schools sound like they're on phase one. And they've hired four FTEs to do phase one. And I think it makes sense for
And two.
Yes. Okay. So I guess that's what I want to get a good sense of. I mean, if this is the approach we're taking, and I agree with Supervisor Bono, we kind of just want to keep informed. We want to be able to kind of, you know, monitor where the costs are and have some oversight. I'm not trying to micromanage you, but this is, you know, hemorrhaging money in a year where, geez, everybody seems like they're coming to us with a gun saying, hey, we need another $10 million just to get through next year. So hopefully you can appreciate, you know, where we're coming from here a little bit. But my takeaway, hopefully, is if you got four FTEs and you got that approved for this year, and what were the two? Because that didn't come clear to me in the item. What were the additional two?
There are seven total of the ones in my shop. Four of them are
four for phase one.
Right.
So let's close out phase one.
And two are for really for phase two.
Right. So are the schools at phase two yet? When is their planned implementation of phase two?
They go with us.
The combined,
so we can set the phase two implementation. We have some flexibility on there when we need to implement phase two.
Again, with a 15-month timeline, there really isn't much flexibility. There's January or there's next September. I mean, really, you're running into a wall at that point.
Just keep in mind, this is for both the schools and the county.
Understood.
So the entire project is for both of us.
But you have the schools are being supported by school personnel.
They, Correct, and they added, I believe, 8 additional positions.
Right.
For DIT as well.
For in their finance department and 4 in their DIT office to provide support for the end of phase 1 and for phase 2. So they did that last month. Mm-hmm. But what's driving the schedule is really the school schedule, not the county.
Right.
And so we're backing into those dates because they cannot go live any later than April 1. Otherwise, they run into their main contract period. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had originally delayed the project from July 1 because we were supposed to go, you were supposed to start or implement phase 2 on July 1st.
Which we did. We're up July 1.
We went live on phase 1. But we stopped phase 2 and the implementation of phase 2 because we recognized that we had issues, and so which were articulated by Mr. Mays at the beginning of this section of the meeting. So we intentionally stopped it to give the board options, which are outlined in your packet. So, but if you're talking specifically about the calendar is driven by the schools. It's a 15-month implementation process. So if we miss the January 1 or beginning of January 1 implementation date, we essentially have to stop until September because it's a 15-month implementation window.
Well, and that's part of my question, Tim, which is one of the options, option 3, says phase 2 Oracle Human Resources would not be implemented. So how is that an option that's being presented? I mean, I assume that
we can give you, I mean, the 3 options are there. So one thing you could do is option 2 is we would need roughly $2.5 million to close out phase 1.
To maintain phase 1, right?
Yeah. Correct, which would put it in the service. Yeah, and I believe option 2 is rebidding this phase and see if we, you know, so we would cancel the contract that we have and we would rebid for these modules.
2 is a rebid. 3 is just don't do it. Stay with our current vendor
until it dies.
2 really dies,
and it's a real system. It has corporate support out there. It's just not a very good system, and the paperwork involved in our time and
attention. Is option 2 just going to cost us more?
I would think so.
And we're just going to face the inevitable anyhow.
I think option 2 is the worst case scenario.
Great.
What I guess we don't have insight on because we're not on your staff, we're not kind of in the day-to-day. Does this system possibly, there are elements of phase 2 that are nice elements to have for HR that maybe aren't required? So we're staffing up, we're getting the expertise, we're doing all this, but I know we talked about it in our call. This is an extremely robust system with more capacity and, you know, to be able to provide us additional reports we may or may not ever utilize. What I'm trying to glean from this, if we did something similar to my work, what do we need to get to, and what are kind of the things that maybe aren't as critical? And not being on your staff, Wendy, or anything like that, I don't know what those elements may be.
You are buying, as we've said, you're buying multiple modules. You don't buy a single off-the-shelf software package. You buy a software package that has multiple modules, many of whom are written by different people. But yes, you're correct. Our staff and school staff have been looking. Do we need the full suite of things that are in the second phase? There's at least one module that, no, we probably don't need. We're trying to figure out whether we can get a credit for not installing that. I'm just not sure that the initial contract is written in such a way that provides us with that. That is certainly something we're looking at, though,
because
there are parts of it. There's a part of it that basically, does commission-type payroll.
Right.
Well, we don't do that in the county, so we probably don't need that module. So we won't implement it no matter what, but we're trying to figure out, can we not implement it and get money back for that for other uses?
Understood. Well, thank you. I appreciate you answering my questions. I appreciate all the efforts. I think they're in that item. You call them Herculean with your staff. Please let them know we appreciate their efforts, and we're trying to get our hands around it. Thank you.
Bring something up and then recognize Supervisor Letourneau. Given the crunch, it may be necessary to schedule a single-purpose second finance committee meeting this month where you can come back to us with what I was talking about earlier, including the CS&T milestones, where the appropriations would occur, the contingency fund specifics. It would be the only purpose of the meeting. We could even start it at 6 p.m. to accommodate Supervisor Letourneau, because it shouldn't be tops an hour meeting. But I almost feel we need to do that so we can get a recommendation to the full board, because with all these holidays, we're just backed into a corner. And I recognize what you're saying about, you know, the schools have their hiring period, and in some ways that is your 12-month delay if we don't get there. So I think we need to see that plan. I think that's the problem. So, all right, Supervisor Letourneau.
Yeah, I'll say at the onset, I'm supportive of that. We are in a very, very serious situation here, and I don't think our desire not to meet should outweigh what our responsibility is to try to get this right. And I would not look forward to a full board meeting with a pretty packed agenda in which we are seeing this plan for the first time. I don't know that that's going to go well for anybody. So I think we need to do that, support that. I don't want to dwell too much on the past, because I recognize we need to look forward, but we've gotten a pretty good accounting of what happened. I'm not quite sure we're getting at the why part of that. And let me say that I recognize, first of all, for our part, seven of us were not on the board at the time that this was initially implemented. And you, Mr. May, were not the department director at that time. Neither was Ms. Wickens. So nobody here was really necessarily the one who would have been the why person at that time. But I need to understand why we didn't think we needed more staff, and why the board, were there questions the board should have asked and didn't? And I'm asking that only because I want to understand going forward what we as board members should be looking at so we never get into one of these kind of situations.
We thought at the time, we knew from the very beginning, an item on the steering committee meets every Friday and has done so for 3 years now. The on our agenda every time is the lack of resources. It has been that way from the very beginning. Wendy and I, both as deputies, would go to those meetings for Mark and Jean as well. And so we knew from the beginning that we were running a risk by trying to do this. The problem was, when we started down this process, we were at a period of time when we were actually reducing the amount of county staff. I mean, we actually, you know, eliminated, you know, well over 100 positions during that time period.
Was that not understood at the time, though? I mean, that was a decision by the board to eliminate those decisions through the budget process, right?
It was a very difficult time. We frankly felt constrained. We frankly felt there would not be any receptive audience to trying to add additional staff to this at that time. We, you know, collectively chose to take the gamble that we could do this. We were wrong.
Well, okay, so I think in the future, perhaps the lesson is, even if you think the board's not going to be receptive, it's your responsibility to come to us and say, we're not sure we can do this, and then let us be the ones to decide that, because I feel like that board maybe never had the option to actually try to get us to a point where we're not sitting where we are today with this type of overrun. Be that as it may, I also think that if we are in this time-sensitive crutch, I wish we had gotten this item last month. I don't understand why we're getting it now with a gun to our head, and now in order to meet a deadline 15 months from now, we basically have no options. I'm not quite sure I understand that, because this has been coming, and everybody's known it's been coming for a while, and we've just been sort of waiting for it. I don't think we knew what the numbers are. Maybe you didn't understand exactly what the numbers are.
We called a full halt to our forward progress in late September, at the steering committee level, and at that point we undertook a substantial review of what resources would be needed for the rest of the process to make this a success. We frankly are just still finishing up that analysis at this point in time.
Okay, so my comment then is, the reality is the public doesn't care who was on the Board of Supervisors. The public doesn't care who was sitting in what seat when. We run the government, and we need to make sure that we're now running it moving forward with as much oversight as we can. And I think there is a responsibility that now we have to do what the chairman of the Finance Committee suggested, set up a specific approach to not hand over large sums of money without milestones and understanding exactly what's going where and when. I don't know the extent that which that can be done on the headcount issue, because it sounds like right away we're going to need people, so we may have to just bite the bullet on that one. I would like you to look at that too, obviously.
Certainly.
That's really all we can do at this point, is try to fix it going forward. I understand that there's going to be a lot of people upset in the public, just as we are. just as I'm sure you are, because I like others have said, I know there's been a lot of work to try to prevent us from getting to here, and I know there's been a lot of work just getting to the point that we are. So I don't want to minimize that also. Thanks.
Even if we approve the motion tonight to give you all $10 million, it still wouldn't get to the full board till 4 December. So if we hold a second finance committee meeting, present the plan, we send that to the full board, it'll still be 4 December. So the timelines are still the same. It's not going to affect your hiring. Your decision point is still that date.
If that's the path you take, I'll probably go ahead and advertise the positions. And if there's no money, then I won't hire them.
Yeah, I don't think it takes, unless there's objection from anybody on the committee, I don't think it takes a motion to basically say, all right, we'll hold a second finance committee meeting this month. But we'll have to, Heather will work with our staffs, and it depends on what other meetings are those evenings, planning commission, other board committee meetings. But it's got to be in time to get it to the 4 December meeting. And we do have Thanksgiving in there. And how long can you get this plan together by then? That's the big question. I mean, you've got to have a lot of it.
I was going to say, we went through this exercise today, and we were pulling it all together. So, yes, we can pull it together.
Okay, and you understand the guidance as to what we're looking
yes.
for. In the end, we want to be able to manage, we want to be able to provide oversight.
Right.
Not manage a project, but provide oversight.
Sure.
And when we hold our monthly finance meetings, we can look and say, this milestone, all right, we're supposed to be there by that date. We're 80% there. This capability we're on, and look, we're within cost for that milestone. Then we can go to the next one. So we need to have a way to do oversight.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, sir. That's on the
chairman. Yeah, and then I need to let Ken speak.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ken. I was just going to say, I think it's a good practice, Ben, to advertise the positions now. I think you should do that, and to make your time frame, you should move forward with that, and I would recommend.
Yeah, I mean, if for some reason it doesn't happen, you don't have to hire them. And don't put out any offer letters, but you can begin getting resumes in the door. Yeah, contingencies, sure. Supervisor Reed?
I just want to say that, yes, I was really flabbergasted by the price tag here. I'm not an expert in this ERP matter or anything like that. I defer to Mr. Bone on this because he's been through this before at his own company. But I think it would really help to know where the public is going to benefit. I would love to see, you know, if how this is going to save on resources. It's not going to save on personnel, according to what you told me in the in our teleconference. It's going to add to personnel if we have to go for those FTEs. So if there's any way you can come back and document that, because it's been many, many years since the prior board has funded this, and I think the public has a right to know where their money's going. And I'm actually surprised that this was not put in as a capital project. It's being done through surplus fund balance, as you like to call it. It says fund balance.
Was the software like Oracle capitalized, those types of things?
Yes.
Yeah, so there were capital portions
okay,
to the project.
Capital portions.
This has all been carried in the capital budget
not,
side.
But
right.
That doesn't say that. I didn't see that in the packet. It said fund balance. So an 80% cost overrun. Again, the public has to know where it's going to see the benefits. So if you can come back with that, I would be a very happy camper.
We'll be glad to do that. For the record, the initial $25 million estimate did not survive even the first bids. The bids alone were far more than that. That's at which point we came to the board and said, we're going to need $30 million to do this.
Right.
So it's bad. It's not quite that bad, but it's bad. We're fully admitting that.
I do agree with your observation that there prior board may not have been receptive, but remember, in their defense, too, there was a recession that happened there. And the county was cutting to control the tax rate at the time. So, and Mr. Delgado, you were there at the time. And I remember the board was trying to rein things in because the tax base was falling out from underneath us.
We eliminated and pushed off capital projects. I mean, it was a very, it was a very severe time.
Correct, okay. All right, anybody else want to speak? Unless there's any objections, we'll get a second single-purpose finance committee. This will be the only thing on the agenda for somewhere later this month when you're ready. If you can give work with Heather and staff as to when you think you can have it prepared. Obviously, we have. You want a motion? I don't. I think we're just giving guidance to staff, and I don't think we need to vote on it tonight. We can vote on it when you come back to us. But remember, milestones for CS&T. Appropriations, contingency fund, those types of things need to be laid out for us.
Yes, sir.
and Ken would, had his request on the public benefits. Sure. So, and that can even follow a little later if we have to, but we need the plan to go to the full board on the 4th. Yes, so, okay. Anybody else? All right, folks. Well, that was a fun item. So with that, we stand adjourned. Thank you. Stand adjourned. Thank you. So with that, we